All right, you heard it there. The loss to Notre Dame, 70-66. The Northwestern Wildcats fall 3-2 on the season. Tough one.
Wow.
They had that game. We got really excited in the office. I was like, this is huge. I was already making my plans to go to the regional.
Hey, but you know what? They covered the spread for me, so I'm happy.
You're really getting the spread on the challenge tournament, whatever that was called, right? The Legends Tournament.
Legends Tournament, I think.
Yeah, it was big money on the line early in the season.
Maybe in a few years, Notre Dame will vacate this win as well.
That's right. That's what's going to happen. I have to say, you know, from being in the building and listening to Northwestern basketball, not a bad thing. I know the record's 3-2, but tough losses to Butler and Notre Dame, who both will factor into postseason college basketball. So, you know, I mean, the tough schedule starts after Christmas. Right after Christmas, they start the Big Ten schedule, and that's when you get all those teams. And it's not like football where you play like half of them once. You play all of them twice. That's essentially how Big Ten college basketball works. So Northwestern's got their work cut out. But if they do well, you know, in the Big Ten schedule, this could be the year they break out. Finally get to that NCAA tournament, the big dance. All right. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is a download here on 720 WGN. We got a big show coming up for you. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. A brisk night here in Chicago. I got to tell you, I'm excited. Come down, walk down Michigan Avenue. All the lights are out. It's good to be on the air here in Chicago at 720 WGN for the night. We have a great show lined up for you tonight. I'm so excited. We have some great guests. Award-winning author Mary Roach is going to join us. She's going to be my guest at the big table tonight. She's got a new book called Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. It really takes a sort of a curious look, a quirky look at some of the sciences that go into the military. And not, you know, when it comes to weapons and the militarization, if you will, of the military. We're talking about the science behind it. In the fact of why soldiers wear silk underwear. Or what the Navy does about sharks. It's a whole thing about sharks. And all sorts of another great thing about how the military, mostly the Army, approaches sleep patterns for soldiers. There's all sorts of science that goes into it. And Mary Roach goes in detail with her new book, Grunt, which is out now. So we'll talk with Mary coming up at the big table. As well tonight, filmmaker K. Rocco Shields is going to join us. She takes her extremely successful viral short film, Love Is All We Need, and she created a feature film. The film imagines a world as heterophobic. Gay is the normal, straight is the taboo. It's getting great reviews, and it's been a hit on the festival circuit. And she joins us tonight. We'll talk with her in the 9 o'clock hour. Also talk to Doug Plank, as we do every week, about the Chicago Bears. And now the Matt Barkley era. This is a great stat, Pete. Matt Barkley would be in line to be the Bears' 20th starting quarterback of the 21st century. So if you think about that, from the last 16 seasons, he would be the 20th starting quarterback. Now, if you really think closely, 8 or 9 of those years have been Jay Cutler, but he's been injured so often. And you really think about him as a quarterback, he has, how many years have we seen? Oh, you know, he's out for 6 weeks, he's out for 7 weeks, and there's been different backup quarterbacks. Matt Barkley's in line to be the 20th starting quarterback of the 21st century. That's still amazing for the amount of money that they give to Jay Cutler to be the starting quarterback for the Bears, and probably won't from here on out. And also tonight, Soli Santos, Blake Burkhart, they're going to be my guests as we play the worst. That's in 10 o'clock hour, 312-981-7200. That's when we complain about the worst things in our society for prizes. That's coming up all tonight. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. Well, let's start off here. A couple months back, we had Mary Sue Barrett on the show. She's the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council. And we were talking about Chicago, why Chicago was losing population. And I really enjoyed the conversation, so we reached out to say, why don't you come back on the regular? So Mary Sue Barrett, it's amazing to me because I was looking at the dates. I think the first time we talked was May, maybe April or May of 20, and we've been having conversations with you and with others from the MPC. And tonight we thought we'd take a look at what this past election really means for our region, for infrastructure, federal funding, projects in the pipeline, inequality. Does the Trump administration help or hurt the state of Illinois and the ongoing needs in the Midwest? Mary Sue Barrett is back in studio. Mary Sue, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks. Great to be back.
So let's talk about this. I mean, right when I think about it, I think about federal funding really being really about infrastructure, about the idea of protecting waterways or building bridges or working on the roads. But it's much more than that.
It definitely is, and I think infrastructure is top of mind, both because we're used to our federal government traditionally having a big role in this, plus it's one of the few things that President-elect Trump has talked about. I actually brought with me the paragraph, it's not longer than a paragraph, of what is on his website and in his transition report, his campaign statements, mm-hmm. which now is guiding his transition. And it doesn't, of course, say a lot. It talks about seeking to invest $550 billion. Make sure you get that B in there.
Yeah, right.
Other reports, quoting some of his advisors, and of course, some of these folks are authorized, others are unauthorized, talks about $1 trillion. And so that is a huge range between $550 billion and $1 trillion. Which number is right? Nobody knows. Are we talking about borrowing? Are we talking about new revenues? Is this about, you know, everyone's reading
It's mainly for infrastructure. That's what we're talking about, the concept.
This piece is for infrastructure. Yeah. And initially the list of things talked about was roads and bridges and airports. More recently, Trump's folks added transit to the mix. I had a chance to hear the RTA chairman, Kirk Dillard, mm-hmm. speak earlier this week, and he really deadpanned a reference to the fact that transit was included, and his comment was, "That's good." So, you know, everyone's grasping trying to figure out what this means.
Yeah, and I'm really interested in the concept of infrastructure, because when President Obama first started, they put a lot of money into what was essentially almost considered a bailout, but the concept being an infrastructure bailout, where there's a huge bill that was thrown, a lot of money given to federal to work on different projects. And we saw some of that here in the state of Illinois. Is that the kind of thing that you think we'll see with the Trump administration? He starts, earmarks a lot of money into infrastructure, and we see big sort of U.S. federal projects happening around the region, around the Midwest and the state of Illinois?
No, I think our dynamic right now is very different. We were in the midst of the worst part of a recession then, and this was a stimulus package that began the Obama administration. That Recovery Act did focus a lot of resources, but you heard the term again and again, shovel ready. Now, that's about getting dollars out on the street into projects as quickly as possible. The downside of that, it was not necessarily the best projects to transform the economy. I mean, we've got sectors and corridors and transportation patterns that are changing as the population changes. So having something that's just been in the pipeline the longest and is ready to go is not necessarily your best project.
Right.
So today you're seeing a lot more creativity. On the way to your studios here in the Tribune Tower tonight, I decided to take the Riverwalk. What a great asset. Great way to enjoy downtown. And there is not only those additional six blocks that have been added to the Riverwalk in the last year and two, but now there's a plan for Great Rivers Chicago about creating continuous riverfront paths on the North Branch, on the South Branch, really opening up the riverfronts. This is an infrastructure project, but it's not ready to go tomorrow. It needs all sorts of assistance. We've got Union Station modernization. We've got Western access to O'Hare. The Red and Purple Line project has been in the news recently.
Well, I mean, that was the news piece about whether or not we're going to see the mayor of Chicago, even the governor of Illinois, sort of fast track any sort of need for federal funding at the waning days of the Obama administration to avoid having to go through any sort of new process with the Trump administration.
You know, I think that's a little bit of hype, perhaps media fueled. The Red Purple modernization is a massive project that has been in the works and very thoughtfully planned for a long time. There is a new tool that the state did authorize this summer. We were very proud to support it, and it creates a zone around a transportation asset. In this case, the Red and Purple Line, which carries just a ton of people, and to modernize that, you can capture a portion of the new development that improved transit is going to attract and use that to pay for the transit system's upgrade. Now, there's been dollars waiting in Washington for this project for a while. I mean, we've been eligible for these dollars. But because the state's dysfunction and having no budget, there was no local match. There was no prospect of local dollars.
And so, that's usually how it goes when you talk about federal funding is some sort of local match.
It does require that. And it's just a tragedy to leave dollars on the table there. So this was a great example of local leaders, state leaders, and our congressional delegation really being on the same page to say, let's take this self-help tool and put it to work for us. So that law was passed in June. It's being authorized by the city council this month. It's going to be expedited in Washington, but it's not like this was, you know, came out of
they're not speeding up. Right, right. Mary Sue Barrett is the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. I want to talk about politics, of course, a big part of this. This was a blue state that was that we saw everything from the Democratic city of Chicago, really sort of, you know, everything from taking down honorary street signs to pushing back on being a sanctuary city. But also you see a governor in the state of Illinois, who Republican, who denounced Donald Trump or did everything he could during the campaign to not associate Illinois Republicans. So we'll talk about if any of those have impact politically on us seeing federal dollars in the state of Illinois coming up here in the Trump administration. Mary Sue Barrett in studio here on The Download. Stay with us. This download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Mary Sue Barrett, the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council, is in studio with me. We do this once a month talking about how to improve blank. And today we're taking a step to in that direction as we talk about how, I guess it would be how to improve federal funding for the area with a Trump administration coming up here next year. I'm interested, you know, it's one of those things where I guess the golden question, I mean, what everybody who would be listening to this right now really wants to know is whether or not there are political implications to going against Donald Trump, this state, both parties really, going against Donald Trump in the general election, losing. Does Donald Trump, the president-elect, does he hold a grudge against the state of Illinois?
This is the third biggest metropolitan region in the country, and you need successful urban areas. The crossroads of America has to be high-functioning and successful for the country to succeed. So whether it's Congressman Peter Roskam on the House Ways and Means Committee or Congressman Quigley, who made a point this week of saying, you know, the congressional delegation will be united on making sure that no one is the source of retribution. You know, this is a time to come together, and we take President-elect Trump at his message from election night.
But I mean, okay, let's put political implications aside, the concept of both parties being against Donald Trump in the state of Illinois. But Donald Trump has said in his websites or his first 100 days that he would look to remove federal funding for sanctuary cities. Rahm Emanuel has come out and said, we're not changing in New York and L.A. as well, but they're saying we're not changing. We are continuing to be a sanctuary city. Does that have any impact on what we might see when it comes to dollars coming our way for infrastructure programs?
You know, I think this is a moment to celebrate that the city is and the region is talking about what we value. I mean, we value coming together across race and class boundaries and being a place that welcomes immigrants. It's such a part of our history. And so for lots of voices to be out there boldly saying, you know, from Mayor Emanuel down the line, that this is what we believe in. This is what makes us strong. This is what makes us Chicago, I think is going to carry the day. And, you know, there's just a lot of rhetoric that people aren't quite sure what it means because that's the style that we're in coming off of the campaign. It will move to a governance mode.
All right. So one of the issues I thought I continue to talk about federal funding in terms of some of the things that we need here in Chicago and the region. We've talked on this program about the waterways. We've talked about roads. We've talked about population. We've talked about taxes. One thing we haven't had a chance to, and we've danced around it, it's been a main core, is inequality. And this is something where we've talked about segregation on the program before, but this concept of seeing more of the haves and the have-nots in this country that we live in, the United States of America and the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago, does there need to be federal dollars put to that issue, the issue of inequality, the issue of segregation, the issue of not having resources available for some of the I guess for some of the residents of the state of Illinois?
Clearly, the vote for change is a signal of people hurting. There's a rawness to that feeling, and in our city, it has long been intertwined with being so divided by race and class. At the Metropolitan Planning Council, we're partnering with a national research organization called the Urban Institute to get really at what that cost is, not just to the communities where we can see poverty, but to everyone, to the entire city, including people who live in more affluent areas. The fact that this economy is sluggish has something to do with the fact that there's really not opportunity equally. We are that tale of two cities. So there is a federal role, both in understanding those trends, putting dollars behind what we know works. There are lots of promising initiatives that can't get to scale, whether it's dealing with people completing their time in prison and needing a second chance in a workforce track of careers, whether it's affordable housing that has been undercut again and again. I think it's very important to watch some of these appointments. For example, the Department of Housing and Urban Development plays a big role in helping our inner suburbs and our entire metropolitan region figure out how to deal with these problems.
The Associated Press said tonight that Dr. Ben Carson is the suggested choice for Donald Trump when it comes to HUD secretary. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because you're right. I mean, most of federal dollars when it comes to inequality has gone to welfare recipients and people who are getting food stamps and aid in that way. What we really are talking about is almost shifting the paradigm and thinking about inequality in different ways. It's not just about, hey, here's some help for you to buy groceries. It's much more than that. It's about just figuring out how we can create an equal landscape in the city and the region that we live in.
It's a social safety net that is the thing that comes to mind. But when you think about real choice, real opportunity, that means everyone has a way by transit to get to their jobs. Think of how many people don't have a more affordable transit option. It means having affordable housing options in all communities, mm-hmm. not just in the areas which already have a lot. So, for example, if there's a strong job corridor, but there's no housing for middle-wage families in that area, then you're forced to travel long distances and eat up your salary on those additional transportation costs. So that's the kind of good schools, good jobs, good transportation, quality choices that every American wants. And I think that the election result has something to do with people feeling like that's been stolen from them.
Mary Sue Barrett is the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council. She joins us once a month here on The Download to talk about the area, the region, infrastructure, resources. One thing that we haven't had a chance to talk about is on the state level when it comes to the election. We saw some seats change over in the House as well as the Senate and an election, on the state level. When it comes to resources, infrastructure, and the questions there, it all surrounds the fact that we haven't had a budget. We have a spending plan in place right now, temporary, and they'll get back at it coming up here in 2017. But what are the prospects for, when it comes to infrastructure improvements or just to where we live, the state of Illinois, of us seeing a budget in 2017?
I talked about the theme of self-help earlier when we were talking about the CTA's projects moving forward. I think the same thing is true with our state. We have to extend that outreach hand to the new leaders in Washington and say, we want to work with you. We're prepared to work with you. But we have to get our house in order. And all these pieces fit together. So there's experts who have a game plan for pension reform. There's budget solutions that have been talked about, and there's an infrastructure plan. Those three things going together could really be the magical solution. It will right our economy. It will invest in growth. We lost 22,000 people in the state of Illinois last year, and that kind of it's more than sluggish. It's off the charts. Fallen off the map.
Yeah, and a lot of people talk about the instability when it comes to the state government as one of the reasons that they want out.
It is. It's hurting our reputation, and that uncertainty is the opposite of what families and businesses need. They want to know some predictability about where this city and region and state are going. And at the state level, it's beyond dysfunctional. So I am optimistic that a capital plan could be one of those pieces that everyone can get behind. There was a ballot referendum that passed for a constitutional amendment on a lockbox amendment. That basically says the transportation dollars we raise from transportation user fees, like your license plate fees right. and your gas taxes, ought to go to transportation. Let's fix it. Let's really show people what they're getting for their money. There were some flaws, really deep flaws, in how that was drafted. So we'll be working closely with our partners on cleanup legislation, fixing legislation that will make sure that those dollars are flexible, that local governments have that autonomy. And I'm confident that that can be one of those things restoring confidence.
I was going to say that's something the next time we talk or the next time we should really do one segment on the lockbox resolution, safe roads as it's known in the media. But I know you don't like the name safe roads.
Not just for roads.
Mary Sue Barrett is the president of Metropolitan Planning Council. She joins us once a month or someone from MPC comes in to talk about the big ticket items here in the state of Illinois and the region. Mary Sue, great to see you.
Thanks very much. You too.
Welcome back to the Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest is an award-winning author and New York Times bestseller. Mary Roach has made a name for herself using her curiosity to explore the science behind sex, space, afterlife, and human cadavers. Her new book is called Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. It explores everything from soldiers' uniforms to the Navy's research into shark repellent. It's a fascinating look at the science used in helping keep soldiers alive. Mary Roach is in town for the Chicago Humanities Festival, and she joins me in studio. Mary Roach, nice to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Hey, great to meet you.
This is a great book. I was riveted from cover to cover on the concept of, like, just getting to understand all the science at its play when it comes to war. You say early in the book, this is not really about killing. It's really about keeping things alive.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Exactly. You think of military science, you think of bombs, guns, strategy,
yeah.
all of that. That doesn't interest. The Discovery Channel does a really fine job with the big things that blow up and kill people, and that's not my bag. So I'm like the white hat side of it. So I'm looking at, I like all the science that goes into the, I like the day to day grind of being a soldier, like extreme heat and flies and loud noise and sleep deprivation and mm-hmm. stress. And also sort of the putting people back together if they step yeah. on a bomb, that kind of thing. So, not the kind of military science people typically think of.
I mean, you've made, and we'll talk about this in the interview, but you've made a career off of using your curiosity as a guide when it comes to some of these big ticket items, whether it be sex or space or war. What was it about yeah. war that attracted you? What was the idea of taking that concept and
this idea came to me in kind of an unusual way. I was reporting in India on the world's hottest chili pepper, Bhut Jolokia, where this is in this remote part of India. They have this chili pepper eating contest where people eat like 10 or a dozen of these, and they get taken away in an ambulance. It's a really crazy Whoa. Scene. Anyway, while I was there, someone said, hey, did you know the Indian Defense Ministry made a bomb out of this, like an exploding chili pepper powder, non-lethal thing, you know, to clear the room, sort of pepper spray, but sustainably locally grown with local
Organic,
pepper,
right,
organically
right, right,
grown.
Right.
So I thought, well, it sounds like I should include that. So I went to this lab that the Indian Defense Ministry has, and they're doing, you know, they have the pepper spray, which didn't work out because it's prone to mildew. So they never used that. But they were working on a leech repellent. That's just like a Mary Roach thing. I'm like, no, really? How do you test a leech repellent? Well, we're going down to the river and rolling up our trousers, putting on the leech. I'm like, oh, this, I don't know. Just because I think of war like most people, I think of war stories and heroism and combat and you know, big ticket items like that and PTSD, which is I don't cover because it's kind of a whole book unto itself. But there's all these kind of esoteric challenges of like flies on the battlefield
yeah.
and noise, which is obviously things are loud, but the challenge being if you give somebody earplugs now, they lose their situational awareness. So like all these like, kind of like things that I hadn't really thought
yeah,
about.
And that's also the power of the book is it's a lot of things you don't think about when it comes to war. One of which, I mean, just to give examples, early on you talk about the idea of zippers and snipers, you know, that the zippers don't really work if you are in a position where you have to crawl around and move around. Talk about that.
Yeah, right. I was at Natick Labs has this design studio, that right there. Design,
right away, yeah.
Fashion designers at this military lab. Anyway, this woman who's a beautiful woman who's a fashion designer, she's showing me, you know, it's like a dress form that they have in design studios. And she's showing me this top, and it's a sniper top. I love that she called it a top. this is our base sniper top. And so I was like, wow, that's really sleek. It's very clean. And I was sort of complimenting her design. She said, well, that's because it's a side closure, and that's functional, because if you're a sniper, you're somebody, you may be lying on your belly for 8 hours. And if you have a zipper, first of all, it's uncomfortable. And also dirt, sand will get ground into the little teeth, and then they don't work anymore. So she made it a side closure, and then she put the pockets on the sleeves rather than on the chest, because you're lying on your chest. Who thinks about this stuff? The woman in the design studio at Natick Labs.
The Natick Labs plays a big role in the book, but also, I mean, the concept of the uniform. There's a lot of factors that go into, you know, what goes into a uniform for a soldier. One of which I was really interested in, was about the underwear. You know, there was, at first, because born out of the idea of a protective gear, almost like a bulletproof underwear, if you will. But it turned out that silk underwear is where they landed. Let's talk about this.
Yeah. There's this company that was kind of, you know, the language, this is bomb-proof underwear.
That's what it was,
which
bomb-proof,
to me,
right.
I was like, come on. You can blow up a tank. You can certainly blow up a pair of underwear. What they meant, it's not bomb-proof, but what it is, if an IED goes off, IEDs are buried explosives. So what they're doing, if you're down, you know, if you're a few feet away, you might not lose limbs, but this sand and dirt, you basically get sandblasted. And that's bad enough, but the sand and dirt carries all this bacteria. And it just, those little tiny projectiles of sand and dirt get jammed into your leg or whatever, wherever the impact is. So you get these horrible infections and these recurring infections. So if you have something like, there are Kevlar underwear, but Kevlar, people don't realize Kevlar, you need like 15, 20, even 40 plies to be bulletproof.
So it's not good for a soldier who has to move. And,
it's not good underwear. It's not a comfortable underwear item. What does work, silk. Silk is very, very strong by weight. It's one of the strongest fabrics.
Yeah.
And it's also natural, comfortable, breathable. So it's just funny. The military is like, rejecting some of the high tech and embracing natural fibers.
And you know, the idea that, you know, if there, God forbid, there is a wound in some form, silk is not the kind of fabric that, like a cotton, that's going to get inside the
right.
wound and things like
that's
that.
That's right. Silk doesn't break up and fragment the way cotton does. It's such a great substance that the Natick, for a while in the basement, they had the spider room, this room full of spiders, because they were trying to basically do recombinant spider silk. They figure out the protein sequence and synthesize it so that they don't have to. Well, you can't really spider silk. You can't, like, unlike silkworm silk, where you can kind of farm it. You can have silkworms kind of doing their thing. That's, you can't with spider silk. They're trying to figure out a way. So they had the spider room. I love that.
Mary Roach is my guest in studio. Her new book is called Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. Explores everything from what we're talking about, soldiers' uniform, undergarments, I want to talk about this coming up, the Navy's research project into shark repellent, which is it's just fascinating the way that plays out. Mary Roach in studio at the big table tonight. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, Mary Roach, the award-winning New York Times bestselling author. Her new book is called Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. And she's in town for the Chicago Humanities Festival. She took some time out to talk to us tonight. I mean, there's so much that goes into this, and we've almost glorified the idea of science around war to weapons with James Bond. Oh, I've got this new weapon. I've got this new high-tech thing that's going to make you kill your enemy. And we don't think at all about the fact that science plays such a major role in just keeping soldiers alive. I mean, everything – I mean, I have on the list here, I mean, just like bullet points from the book, but zippers, silk underwear – adaptation plays a big role. The idea of the Army being able to take a tank that they use in Afghanistan and be able to use it in Iraq and have to re-outfit these because the climate, the terrain, the environment, everything's different.
Yeah. No, it's been this ongoing challenge, the fact that a country goes to war with the stuff that they had for the last war. So, you know, if your last war was in tropical, you know, say Vietnam sort of situation. Now you're going to go into the Middle East,
the
desert. So now you need things that'll keep you alive in extreme heat, and it's dry, and the bugs are different. you know, and you spent all this money on like tents and uniforms that would resist mildew. Okay,
right.
And now, like, great, we've got these mildew-resistant uniforms that are really, really hot, and people are getting heat stroke. And so you have, and with the vehicles, yeah, that was they were going into, you know, from Eastern Europe last conflict, and then into the Middle East with Humvees, and they start getting hit with, you know, RPGs, and they were not holding up, and it was bad. I mean, you had soldiers like just getting like tin, like garbage cans and whatever,
right.
And just trying to up armor. I love that verb, up armor.
Up armor.
Trying
right.
to up armor on their own because, you know, you had to come up with a new vehicle ultimately. But then, how? What do you do when you? And also RPGs. They figured out it was pretty cool. You could just do slat armor, which is just putting like a fencing on the side,
right.
Lightweight, so you're not going to put on too much weight so the engine can't, because that's the problem. If you just throw a lot of armor on, now the engine and the brakes are beyond what they can deal with. But so slat armor is like the RPG would come in, it was like fonk, stuck in the little slat. Mm-hmm. So they would come back to the base like with, you know, bristles of like porcupines. So that, you know, that's a good idea and cheap and easy. But then the insurgents started burying bombs,
yeah.
First on the side of the road, so they had to up armor the side, and then
underneath,
right. And now underneath. That was bigger and bigger, right in the roadway. And they had the seats bolted to the bottom. So now you got this force slamming up, and you're sitting in a chair that's bolted to that. It's slamming fat pad on the heel would burst, the like lower limb injuries, pelvis, spine. So they had to figure out, you know, what kind of vehicle?
And they got to figure out quickly.
It's
a major.
Yeah, exactly. And they can't figure it out quickly, and that's awful. And, you know, and that's so frustrating for everybody. So
and there is something about that. I mean, that you know, and that isn't necessarily what the book's about, but that the Army puts a lot of money into science and research, not just for the weapons and high tech stuff, but
right.
for the science of keeping the soldiers alive.
Right.
But sometimes it takes trial and error, it takes cause and
right,
effect,
right.
It takes months to figure out. Hey, and these soldiers are dealing with some outdated materials and things that
exactly.
aren't going to work for
and
the situation they're in.
Yeah, yeah, and with the vehicles. You know, you say, okay, we definitely need a new troop carrier, a personnel carrier that is mine resistant, that's going to withstand this. So you get these contractors, they've got 10 prototypes. Ours is the best. Ours is the most protective. Well, how do you know? You're not going to just like put guys and women in it and say, here, see if that works for you. You have to test it. So how do you test that? Crash test dummy. Well, those are made for automotive crashes, which is a head-on or like a T-bone crash at mm-hmm. an intersection. And that's nothing like, because when the bomb goes off underneath you,
yeah.
floor smashing upward. So instead of, you know, the head going forward and it's completely
yeah.
different. So they're designing a whole new crash test dummy. I mean, that's a long process. You got to use cadavers to get a sort of different documenting what happens at this kind of force and this kind of
yeah,
force.
Yeah, I have written down here cadaver injury data, which
yeah.
is a big part of
it. Yeah,
yeah,
and it's so slow going. And then the horrible thing is that by the time they're done, who knows where we'll be and what the threat will be and what they'll be throwing.
That's
going to
be the problem,
yeah.
I think, with all of the science and everything that goes into it is just keeping up. We've just seen from yeah. small wars moving from even from Afghanistan to Iraq. I mean,
right.
they're different terrains and the Army has to pick
exactly,
up.
Exactly.
Mary Roach
yeah.
is my guest in studio. She's the author of Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. We've teased it out, the idea of the ears and sound. And when you think of battle zones or even in soldiers that have to shoot weapons, big weapons,
right.
they're loud. I mean, these are the kind of things where, I mean, if you don't have protection for your ears, you're talking about side effects, injuries, things that are right. happening to soldiers that were unintended.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just the M16, the rifle that's used, you fire that thing without any kind of protection, one shot can cause incremental damage because it's so loud. I mean, hearing loss happens, you know, it's not just how loud it is, but it's how loud it is and how long you're exposed. So say like 85 decibels, that's like a really loud, busy street. You got about 8 hours of that noise where you'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But something as loud as an M16 or an anti-tank weapon, a fraction of a second, that can cause
and
damage.
And they're prolonged,
prolonged
exposure to this.
Yeah, I mean, I was down at Camp Pendleton with some military audiologists. There was the thing they were doing there. At one point, they had a bunch of special operations guys sitting talking to the audiologists. And one of the audiologists said, how many of you have significant hearing damage? Every hand went up. I mean, there's like two guys there in their 40s that have hearing aids. I mean, you're exposed to so much. And the problem, I mean, yeah, you can protect hearing, but when you do that, you lose your situational awareness, which is the big thing for a soldier. You got to know, like, who's behind you? What are your fellow soldiers saying to
you? You need to use all your senses, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Somebody sneaking up behind, it's a car coming up behind you on the gravel. You're not going to hear that.
So how does the Army or the Marines, or how do they deal with this? I mean, is this something
Yeah, they have a system called TCAPS, Tactical Communication Protection System. So it's like a headset with a mouthpiece built in that you can wirelessly talk to people around you. I tried one on. It's kind of amazing. It gives you like bionic hearing.
So it's almost like video games.
Yeah. It does is, well, it decreases the loud noises. It muffles those to the point where it's safe. But it can tell between a quiet sound and a loud sound. So a human voice, somebody talking, it amplifies that. At the same time, it dampens the loud noises. So you could be across, you know, way across the room, and kind of like, well, you're too young, but there was this show, The Bionic Woman,
sure.
And she had this bionic,
sure.
Dee, 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 and she'd be listening in on some thugs across the street. I mean, you have that. I was like, whoa, I wanted it to be on public transit and just eavesdrop.
Right. That sounds like it could be in the wrong hands real quick, so
yeah.
That's good to know. But, I mean, we'll continue. Let's take a break and get an update on tonight's news. But I really want to tell the story about shark repellent.
Yeah.
Because it's so interesting, and it happened in World War II or right around that time, trying to figure out a way to keep sharks away from Navy soldiers who may either get shot down, fall off a boat, whatever it might be.
Yep.
But there's a lot going on. Mary Roach is my guest tonight. She is the author of Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. She's in town for the Chicago Humanities Festival. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, continue the conversation.
To the Bulls tonight, end of the first quarter. The Bulls have a 31-19 lead over the Nuggets in Denver.
Yeah, I will say this, Rob, about the Bulls. I just was looking. I did some research by Googling. The Bulls have not won in Denver in 10 years.
Really?
Yeah. They've had such a bad time on this West Coast circus trip. This is, of course, their last one. Uh-huh. The circus is not coming back to UC. They also have not had a winning record on this. They usually go 6 games. They have not had a winning record in 15 years. Right now, they're 3-1 on the trip. They've got a big lead in Denver. If they can hold on, they not only will erase a 10-year deficit, but they'll also have their first winning record in 15 years.
Wow.
That should say something about this team, right?
Well, look, man. You know, balanced,
just,
I guess.
Just call me a statistician. Just call me the resident Googler.
Well, let's see. Jimmy Butler right now leads the way, Justin, with 10 points. Everybody else in single digits. Nothing yet on Nikola Mirotic, but I will certainly keep you posted.
No, thank you, yes.
I think his beard grows by the quarter.
We need to know what his beard total is at halftime. That's what we're looking.
Sounds good. All right.
Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, Mary Roach, the author of Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. Mary has really made a name for herself using her curiosity to explore things like sex, space, human cadavers. Now it's war. I've been teasing this out the whole hour, this idea of shark repellent. This story really stuck with me. Let's start it off. This all comes from essential research. I mean, this is Navy files that you were going through.
Yeah, it's the Navy, and before them, the OSS, which is the precursor to the CIA. And this is, like you said, World War II. Now, this is the first time, a lot of soldiers who are ditching planes and ships going down,
right.
And they're they're in the water.
South Pacific.
They're in tropical or temperate waters where there are more sharks. And there was a lot of shark hysteria, which is kind of amazing because I also thought of Jaws as being the place that started. But there was a lot of shark phobia, even though at the time all this was happening, no sailor had been killed by a shark. It wasn't a big problem.
It was a morale problem.
No one wanted to fly. I mean, they're like, I will die for my country, but I will not be eaten by a shark. That I won't do. Forget it. No way. Not flying. So they're like, we need something. They called it a pink pill. Part of it was, let's just give them something to have, give them anything. But they also were like, well, maybe we can find something that works. So they got these guys who were, they're biologists, they're natural history guys, and they're like, we've got a big tank. We've got some sharks. They had a couple big tanks, one at Woods Hole and one out on the that atoll where they tested the atomic bomb. So they've got these big tanks and a bunch of sharks, and they're just like throwing stuff in. They're like, let's try nicotine. Nah, that doesn't seem to work. Well, let's try, I don't know, let's
so
try
any sort of
hot
spray,
sauce,
lotion, like, anything like that, right?
Just throw it in there. So they did some, you know, there's some chemical compounds. It wasn't just sort of what do we have in the hallway closet, right. But they did test all of that, and basically. They found, like, one was, like, maleic or malic acid. There were a couple things where, like, I think this is really, really going to work. One of them was decomposing shark meat.
But it was interesting in the story because it took a while. They took the chunks out of shark meat, and then they decomposed it, and then they brought it out there. And you're like, at the end of the day, even if that worked, the idea of putting that in pill form on a soldier who's going into the water is just not going to happen.
Yeah, a little cake of decomposed. I mean, it's like, it was so surreal what they were doing.
Because the idea was the sharks didn't want to be around.
Dead sharks.
Right.
And
right.
They'd gotten it from, because the guy, the main guy in this, Stuart Springer, I think it was, he'd worked in a shark, he's like a shark fisherman. Because nobody really knew much about sharks. And he's like, here's our expert. He's a shark fisherman. And there was this rumor that if you left your sharks on the line and they rotted, that area wasn't good to fish. So they figured something in that decomposed shark must be repelling.
Some chemical
something,
right.
So they all got excited about that, and they head out to, like, the waters off Ecuador. And, you know, these are natural history guys. They're like, expedition, let's go.
Let's go, right.
Yeah, we're going to be we need some funding.
Right.
Yeah, so they're, like, off on the waters outside Ecuador, throwing stuff off the back of the boat, and nothing's working. First of all, they couldn't find sharks for like a week and a half.
Yeah, so the story, as they continue to show this cause and effect, this trial and error to make it work or find a shark repellent, they kind of turned back to the idea of like, maybe we should do some research to see if this is really a thing, if our soldiers are actually being eaten by sharks.
Yeah, the Navy came in. The Navy's like, this is bogus. What do you guys, forget it. We're going to come at it a different way. I should step back. They did come up with a shark chaser, but what it was basically black dye. You kind of hide in like a squid.
Like a squid.
You would be
or
a human
octopus.
Squid.
Yeah, right, right, right.
You would hide in this cloud of black dye as long as it took for that to kind of dissolve into the water and then be useless. But it was, it was the pink pill. It said shark chaser, and you'd be in your life raft. You're like, I've got my shark chaser.
I guess the reason I jumped ahead is only because there was something said about the idea of getting a pill in your emergency case called shark chaser that was freaking out pilots more than the concept of the myth, right?
Yeah, exactly. So say you've made it to the life raft. You're like, phew, here I am. I'll be okay. Phew, okay, I got nothing to worry. I got my water. I got a little bit of water. I got a little bit of food. I'm fine. And then all of a sudden you look down. There's this little packet and it says, shark chaser. You're like, I forgot about sharks.
Right.
So you basically planted this seed of fear in people who might not have been thinking about it. Although their claim was they're already worried about it.
Yeah,
so
right.
Anyway, so but then the Navy came in. They said, let's actually study sharks and let's see, is it true that blood attracts them? Does urine, does sweat? And so again with the big tanks, throwing stuff in the water. And then they started looking at, what is it that attracts a shark to eat? And they found out that what it is a stressed out fish.
Right.
So they took what was called, and this is a scientific term, folks, distressed grouper water, because you couldn't put the grouper in.
Because they wouldn't know.
Well, if you put the grouper in and it thrashed around because you were poking at it, which is how they distressed it, then the thrashing could be the thing that the shark was responding to.
So they need to almost make it stress the fish out and then
take the water that contains the stress compounds, put the water in the shark tank.
And then the shark goes crazy.
The shark goes crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the shark did. The shark, distressed grouper water, do not go scuba diving with a bottle of that.
If you ever see a sign anywhere in the ocean that says, warning, distressed grouper water here. don't go in, right?
Stay clear. Yeah, yeah, clear. Yeah.
So they finally figured it out. They started to work around actual, science around stress.
Yeah, and they started this, and it still exists today, the International Shark Attack File. They started looking at the actual reports and scuba divers, spearfishers in particular. And they realized if you're a spearfisher and you're doing well, you have a lot of bleeding, oozing fish, and you've sort of strung them on your belt, you are a neon sign to a shark, like, dinner.
Right.
We're open. Come over. So people were getting attacked because of the fish on the belt. It wasn't anything having to do with they were saying, "Oh, the scuba suit, you look like a seal."
Right.
Maybe.
That's all been a little bit debunked.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the stress.
So it's distressed fish or just any kind of guts. And they did these amazing tests where they'd take, because they're like mammals. So sharks don't eat. They're not eating mammals, maybe, you know, marine mammals, but they're not interested in that. And to prove it, they took a rat, and this is sad, they took a rat and they doused its fur with mullet blend, another scientific term.
Right.
It was like smeared, like worked it into the fur of the rat. They put the rat in the water with the mullet blend. The shark goes crazy, goes right for the rat. But without the mullet blend, it's just a little rodent swimming around. Doesn't care because that's not dinner.
They really, I mean, besides the shark chaser die, I mean, they just essentially did a marine biology study. I don't know if any of this stuff actually helped figuring out how to protect their soldiers.
You know what
the
best thing they did? The best thing that they did for the soldiers and sailors is they put this brochure, this little booklet called Shark Facts, I think it's called. And it's just basically saying the shark is a wuss. The shark, if you kick it, it goes away. I mean, none of this was done with great whites. And great whites, even if they come over and they're just curious, is this something that will taste good? One bite, you could bleed out. But even then, no shark normally wants to have you for dinner.
I think what's really interesting about it and where it plays in the context of your book is that the armed forces have for years used science at their disposal to be able to help. There have been good experiments and there have been bad. There have been ones that have worked and ones that have just been a long line of
But the Navy stuff was actually really interesting.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to worry about urine or sweat. Now you know.
Now we all know.
Go ahead and pee in the ocean.
Navy, you're okay. You can be in the ocean.
But women menstruating, maybe not.
Yeah, right.
We won't go into that here, but.
Well,
anyway.
I mean, as we wrap up, I'm interested. There's so much to talk about. I mean, the one area that I thought was really interesting, and it's one that you can sort of relate to, is the idea of sleep deprivation or just sleep patterns when it comes to soldiers.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of experiments and tests and science to try and figure out how to make sure that a soldier can be up at night and, you know, sleep on a certain amount of sleep and be able to, wherever the war's at, be there at the time. That's something that the armed forces in our country have been working at for a long time.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, for a long time, they were just kind of looking at, like, wow, could we come up with a drug that would keep you up, but you wouldn't have any of the bad side. I mean, like you would still be competent and you'd still be at 100% of your mental faculties. Well, no.
No.
No. They've gone back all the way. It's now caffeine. But what they're trying to do is minimize the, like you said, you may be flying from Guam to somewhere overseas and it's the jet lag. It's the fact that you may be arriving. Sometimes it works to your favor. If you're a special ops guy and you're flying from Guam somewhere and your night is day, well, primo, because
you're good,
your operation is at night anyway. So they've got glasses, depending if it's you want to block the UV, the sunlight, or you want to manufacture it artificially, depending on what time of day you want to set somebody's clock. You can kind of preset the person by they've got goggles with little blue light coming in that simulates sunlight and then yellow to block it. So using a combination of those, you could sort of have your soldier preset to the time zone that you need them to be.
Well, I mean,
for.
And the other thing in the book is this concept that I didn't really think about. And that's what the book Grunt does for me. It's a lot of like epiphany moments where I'm like, oh, that makes sense. The concept that middle-aged to elderly men are making the sleep choices for 18-year-old soldiers.
Yes.
And the bodies don't work the same.
No, when you're in your teens and 20s, you are going to be wide awake till 12, 1, and you want to sleep till 10 or later. Mm-hmm. That's just how you're programmed. It's not because you're a lazy teenager. That's how you're programmed. You need more sleep, and you need it. You're on a different phase setup. When you're older, it starts getting earlier and earlier and earlier. So you have these 60-year-old guys going, well, you know, I get sleepy at 9 o'clock and I'm up by 5. So what's the matter with that? Let's start basic training at 4:30 a.m. And it's brutal. And this one guy who was making this point, he's like, I took this general around and it was 11 o'clock at night, long after lights out. Everybody's up. They're just sort of lying in bed, like twiddling their thumbs.
I think at the end of the day, How much of this science, or at least the scientific experiments or studies that armed forces are doing for soldiers, how much do you think that it has an impact on everyday lives? The idea of all of us getting some sort of benefit from, you know, figuring out silk is the right fabric to protect, you know, like, I mean, yeah, the concept. I mean, is any of this stuff actually moving to the civilian side?
Tons of it, particularly in the medical side of it. I mean, in terms of vaccines, the military does a ton of work on vaccines. And also just things like this guy, this Navy captain, Phillips, what was his last name? He figured out, okay, if somebody's got really bad cholera, where you got like you're squirting 5 gallons a day and you can die quickly. And he figured out, well, if you add sugar to the rehydration salts, you don't have to do it through an IV. It's so effective, people could drink it. So now you don't have to make your way to a clinic and hook yourself up to an IV. You just find somebody who can just drink this stuff down. So, and it can be out in the field. It doesn't have to be administered through an IV. I mean, that's huge. And it, you know, there's still 2-point-something million deaths from diarrhea in third world countries, and most of it, a lot of it with children. So that's been huge. It's been a huge lifesaver. So there's emergency trauma care. You mean the advances that have been made and prosthetics, that kind of stuff, huge in terms of how it's impacted the civilian.
How forthcoming are the armed forces with this information? I mean, do they see it as do they classify it in a way that they're like, we don't want people to know about the uniform, the no zippers for the snipers. We don't want people to know about the advances we're making in medicine or shark repellent, whatever it is, because it has some benefit to an enemy?
All of the stuff in my book is not classified because I don't have clearance. So right, they right, told me.
Right, right,
I
right.
It's some of the things I was surprised at, like the camouflage facility, that's classified. They wouldn't let me in. They wouldn't talk to me. I'm like, really? Camouflage? It's like throw some colors, swirl them around. There you go.
There you go.
Done.
Yeah, right.
But that was classified. So for the most part, though, they are.
They're upfront.
Yeah. And they want to tell the story because they are upfront about it. And it's a positive thing that's come out of war, when so much of what comes out of war is so god awful, so they were actually happy to share those stories.
The book is called Grunt: The Curious Science of Humans at War. It is by author Mary Roach, who's also written books like Gulp and Stiff and Bonk and others, that she's using her curiosity to explore the science behind things like sex, space, the afterlife, human cadavers, now war. She's in town for the Chicago Humanities Festival. Mary Roach, thanks so much. It's a pleasure having you here tonight. We appreciate it.
Oh, so great. Thank you so much, Justin.
I used to go to that parade all the time. I feel like the last 2 years I've worked here, I've only been at WGN for 2 Thanksgivings, my second Thanksgiving. I've been out of town for both. Like, I was very excited. I was like, oh, maybe I can weasel my way into the VIP zone. I could sit on the bleachers that I used to look at as just a random, Michigan Avenue or State Streeter. Oh, what are they doing over there?
Yeah, longing for...
Oh, look at all those TV people.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I could see them sitting there on the warm bleachers, and I'm standing here. Yeah, I used to love it. I'm not going to be in town. It's unfortunate. I'm going to be in Las Vegas.
A Thanksgiving place to be.
Today I read a story that said that Las Vegas is one of the premier destinations for Thanksgiving. We're doing it. It's not. I'm not a gambler by any stretch. And I'm not a guy who's just like Vegas, baby. It's just not my thing. But my brother lives in California, and he is not coming back for Thanksgiving because they just were back in for the Cubs, and then they're thinking about Christmas. And so we all as a family decided that we'd meet kind of in the middle, where it'd be the place to meet in the middle. So
right.
Las Vegas, mileage-wise, is not the middle, but it's the closest it's thing.
Beats
yeah.
Kansas
yeah,
or
exactly.
something.
I'd be like, here we are, and even though, I guess Denver, maybe.
That'd be nice, yeah.
But yeah, so we're going to Las Vegas for Thanksgiving, which would be the second time I've gone for Thanksgiving. One time it was to meet my grandma halfway. She was in Long Beach. So I guess it's the destination. But I remember going, it was probably 10, 15 years ago, and there was nobody there. Like, it was awesome. I think that was part of the reason I'm like, yeah, let's just do it again. But I read this article that said Las Vegas is now the number one destination for Thanksgiving, like travel.
Really?
Yeah, McCarran.
Just get away from.
I guess. I don't know. What are you doing for Thanksgiving?
I'm staying here.
Want to go to Vegas?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. That'd be great.
The one thing is that they turn the pool, I guess, like where we're staying the next day, the Friday after Thanksgiving, the pool turns into a ice rink. And they do it up, you know, even though it's 70 degrees, they do it up like it's Christmas time with the ice rink and ice skating things. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's great. Are you going to do some skating?
Yeah, I think I will Friday.
Get you pick up your Golden Knights, your Las Vegas Golden Knights hockey gear, and then get out there. Yeah.
I have a feeling I have all these grandiose plans where I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go to the ice rink. Oh, I'm going to do this. And then I'll be like, hey, I'm just going to hit this table real quick, and I'm going to stay here for 6 hours ordering really small gin and tonics. Free gin and tonics. And like, you know what? I'll get another one of those. This is great. Oh, my God. It's 9 o'clock. What did I do with the last 14 hours? Let's hope that doesn't happen. 606 says, taken from the interview with Mary Roach, what are exactly the distressed fish, what are they putting into the water? I said, stress compounds, right? Then they said, so if I get freaked in the ocean, I'm going to get eaten? I'm like, that's the takeaway. That was the takeaway from the hour. I don't know. That's a great way to put it. I'm like, I guess if, you know, fish grouper, and they were talking about the shark experiment with Mary Roach, the idea that if, you know, they put stressed water after they sort of poked and prodded grouper, that the sharks could sense it and they'd go crazy. So what if you're in the ocean and you're distressed in some form? The answer is, you know, maybe if you think your life's in danger and you're bleeding, things like that, yeah, you're in trouble. But I think freaked is, there's different levels of freaked, right?
This is akin to one of the stories that I heard following a shark attack, which there have been seemingly quite a few of over the recent, past little while. The guy said, well, if you're attacked by a shark, try to remain calm. I'm thinking to myself, if I've got a shark's teeth bearing down on my left leg, the last thing I'm going to be is calm.
Calm down.
He goes, because that will attract more sharks. And I'm like, well,
I guess. Take a deep breath. It's just a leg. You don't need it. You need to get back. You need to just calm down. And the shark's like, well, there's one leg. That's a good leg. I'm out of here. Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. I don't know the. I think that might be the takeaway. If grouper gets distressed, yeek. It happens when you get distressed. All right. I guess the moral of the story tonight is don't go to the ocean ever. Right? You don't have to worry about that in the Midwest.
I guess. And thanks, Justin Kaufman. Right now in the NBA in Denver at the half, the Bulls and Nuggets tied at 60.
I went on that rant about
stat about how well they're doing.
They're doing
so
well, and they were up 17. I think the minute I said that, they went cold. The Nuggets went on like a 19-0 run.
Well, you provided the Nuggets with some bulletin board material.
They were like, 20-second timeout. You know what they're saying on WGN in Chicago? That this game's in the bag for the Bulls. Are we going to do this, Nuggets?
Yeah, the 12th guy on the bench there doesn't even dress for the game. He's like, check this out, man. All of a sudden, it works all the way down the bench.
He's got his earbuds in. He's got a transistor radio going 720. Yeah, my bad.
Well, it's tied at 60 at the half.
I learned. Oh, boy, to be a Chicago Bears fan right now. 720 WGN, I'm Justin Kaufman. I guess the only thing that makes it interesting to have a 2-8 team in Chicago is the fact that OB, Hamp, and Kaz becomes must-listen to radio after every Chicago Bears loss. It's so ridiculous. So I was just sort of tallying this up in my head. We're waiting for Doug Plank. He's going to join us to go over what we can expect from the Matt Barkley era here in Chicago. But and there's more, because I saw this, I think it was in a Tribune article today, but I was just writing this down in the break. So for this season, the Chicago Bears on the injured reserve, players that are not coming back, right? You have two quarterbacks, two wide receivers, a left guard, center, tight end, inside linebacker, outside linebacker, cornerback, I believe a safety. Now, they got into it a little bit in the article, saying that some of these players were, you know, sort of waiver wire kind of pickups, and some of them are suspensions, of course. But right now, I mean, you think about it. I mean, from Jay Cutler and Brian Hoyer, we don't know what's up with Jay Cutler's injury. NFL.com was reporting that he has a torn labrum, and that usually means that there's surgery required and that he would be out for the season. But the way the Bears work and the vagaries of NFL injury reports, they'll say, day-to-day, questionable, and we won't really know what's up with Jay Cutler. But right now, all signs point to Matt Barkley, the former USC quarterback, becoming the 20th starting quarterback of the 21st century for the Chicago Bears. Let that sit in. So it's interesting because early on, you would think, oh, yeah, I guess you're right, because that was 2000, 2001. You're thinking maybe the Shane Matthews, Jim Miller, Cade McNown carousel. Then you had the Rex Grossman and the Kyle Ortons, everybody in between. Then you got Jay Cutler in a trade from Denver, which was, what, 2008 maybe, 2009? I mean, he came here in 2008. And he's actually started 100-plus games because his record right now with the Bears is 51-51, which is so Jay Cutler to be the 500 quarterback, the 51-51, so typical mediocre, right? But to think that they've had so many starting quarterbacks that have been backups in his time, he's had a lot of injuries. He's had a couple of years where he's missed considerable amount of time. They were kind of going over, it's interesting, in one of the articles today, they were talking about how he's really defied the odds when it comes to injuries. If he has had an injury history where he's supposed to be out 4 to 6 weeks and he comes back in two, I think it was last year they talked about he was supposed to be out for a month, but he came back after 2 weeks. This year, the same thing. There was a little bit of talk about him being longer, but he came back for that Monday Night Football game. So he's had a good sort of track record of getting back on the field.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, as a starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears, he's had an injury-riddled career. The fact that this will be the 20th starting quarterback in the 21st century, and it's 2016, so that's 16 seasons, is kind of a head-scratcher. Most will say that Jay Cutler will not be the quarterback of the Chicago Bears next year because the way that Phil Emery created the contract for Jay Cutler is they put all the guaranteed money into the first 5 years of his deal. And as of this offseason, there will be really no incentive. There's no guaranteed money. I think it's something like $1 million or $2 million that the Bears will lose by just outright cutting him.
Right.
So the question is, you know, for all of the baggage and the sources at Halas Hall and everything in between that says that, you know, everyone is kind of fed up with the Jay Cutler era, including the fans, is this the last time we will see Jay Cutler on the field for the Chicago Bears? I, for one, who started my – I will make a confession. I started as a Cutler sympathizer.
Oh.
I was a guy who, in the first couple of years, was complaining about everything. Terrible offensive line, it's the wide receivers, Johnny Knox, he's got to go get the ball, you know, and then it seemed like every step of the way with Jay Cutler, the Bears organization tried to rectify the situation, whether it was wide receivers, they brought in his old pal Brandon Marshall, whether it was the offensive line, they never really, really sort of fixed that, but they've thrown a lot of money at it. They seem to do a lot of things to try and make Jay Cutler work, especially when it comes to coaching staffs and think of all the offensive coordinators he's seen and how many have gone away because of Jay Cutler. It has not been the greatest run here in Chicago, and unfortunately, it was one that was over 8 seasons. And the one stat that sticks out more than any, Pete, the one that I was just when I saw the stat, it said Jay Cutler is 51-51 with one playoff appearance in his career in Chicago. One playoff appearance.
Yeah, I think there's that story where, you know, I don't think he's ever made the playoffs in any level of football, even like in Santa Claus, Indiana, like in the midgets, you know. I don't think he made the playoffs ever.
And unfortunately, the one time he did make the playoffs is when he hurt his knee against the Packers in the NFC Championship game. And the worst thing that could happen for Bears fans is that everybody around the league was taking to Twitter and to different social media to call the Bears quarterback soft, question his toughness, to question the Chicago Bears, everything that you don't want as a fan when it comes to playing or rooting for your football team was sort of called out in a very national way in an NFC Championship game, and that was sort of the only time we've ever seen Jay Cutler make it to the playoffs. So not a great run for Jay Cutler. Doug Plank going to join us. We'll take a quick break. We'll get him on the line, and we'll continue to talk about what the Bears are going to do with the last six games of the year. That's how we roll. It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, joining us now on the line is Doug Plank, the great Chicago Bear NFL analyst. You can talk to us about the Matt Barkley era that we're about to embark upon. Doug Plank, surprised at all that it just keeps getting worse for the Bears instead of better?
Justin, you know, it's really frustrating. You know, I've been in a couple bars, I don't mind telling you that, the last couple days here in Chicago, and it's just been really, really frustrating. Just listening to the pain and suffering that Chicago Bear fans have had. And I think really what they want to see is just a little bit of a smidgen of hope, and they just don't see it right now.
It's so interesting. The Giants game, they jumped out on top. They seem to have control of the game. And even down to some timely injuries to Josh Sitton and to Zach Miller, it felt like the Bears still had a chance to win that game at the end. But it seems to be the same broken record over and over this season where Jay Cutler and the Chicago Bears just can't get it done when they need to get it done.
Yeah, it's really sad, you know, and again, because I really go back to, you know, the players, the organization, the coaches, they have a responsibility, the fan base, to at least put on a good product. And, you know, it just seems like, you know, both the execution, the as well as just the sharpness and the attention to detail really starts to just erode as the game goes on. And I don't like to make it just first quarter, second quarter, third. But, you know, it's almost like you're walking downstairs. And they come out in that first half. You know, Jay Cutler was doing fantastic. I think he had one of the highest quarterback ratings ever, you know, for a Chicago Bear quarterback. But then it just starts going down the hill. And it's just a story that's been repeated over and over and over again this season.
Yeah, you really, I mean, you've seen it a couple times now with either Jay Cutler or Brian Hoyer, just this concept of the Bears sort of jumping up on front, but in the second half not being able to keep up. Bears injuries, I'd mentioned this in the last segment, two quarterbacks, two wide receivers, left guard, center, tight end, inside linebacker, outside linebacker, cornerback. These are the injured reserves, not to mention people who've just missed a couple of games. The Chicago Bears really bitten by the injury bug this year. It's pretty abnormal, isn't it?
You know, it absolutely is. You know, and I know that the coaching staff and the, you know, fan base, you know, could point to all these injuries. You know, obviously every team suffers injuries. And usually you have the second next man up philosophy, which usually works out for a lot of good teams that, you know, have ample depth. I mean, that's something that you have to work on as the season goes on. You know, even in training camp, you have to go into the season thinking, okay, can this player now backing up this individual, if we call on him at a critical time, he's going to have to come in and at least play to 80 or 90% of the guy that's in front of him. And, you know, sometimes we have not only just the second man up at a position, sometimes the third and even fourth. So, you know, that's really been challenging for the Bears. You know, then they've had some other issues, which have been off-field issues, you know, that have kept players now off the field. And I think that is what's so devastating for the psyche of a fan, to know that, you know, players have broken rules or not been as disciplined as they should have in the offseason. And I think you add all this up, and it just really creates a lot of frustration.
Well, you just wonder. I mean, with Alshon Jeffery's suspension, now Jarrell Freeman, two players that are you know, the stars on either side of the ball for the Bears, you know, getting caught with PED use or at least substances involved with PEDs. Is this something that, you know, the NFL is cracking down on and all players are kind of cheating around the edges and now they're getting caught? Or is this something where, you know, these are desperate players trying to make a mark in their career and they're just unfortunately getting caught on the Chicago Bears?
You know what? I think, you know, the latter, I think, is a perfect example, Justin. I think these players were going to try to do anything they can to shine, to stand out. They understand that they are on review. And right now they are writing their resume for next year. And it might not be a very good resume up to this point in time in the season. And you know what? Every player, for whatever reason, I don't know why, Justin, they just feel like they could get away with something. You know, whether it's, you know, drinking and driving, or how many players have we seen just do stupid, idiotic things? You know, whether it's you know, slapping their spouse or, you know, drinking and driving and just all the other behaviors that just you would say, come on, this is a professional athlete. He knows better. He shouldn't be doing that. It doesn't matter. There's always that urge to just try to push the envelope as far as you can and many times break the rules.
Well, when you have a situation where, you know, okay, you have one suspension with Alshon Jeffrey, then another suspension the week later from Jarrell Freeman. Does that have an impact on the brand that is the Chicago Bears in the sense that two players back-to-back got busted for PED use or at least substances involved in? Does that make the Bears look bad?
You know what? It makes everybody in the organization look bad. And coaching staff, front office, it doesn't matter, ownership. Because, you know, it's one thing to have one player have an error and make a mistake. But I'm telling you, that message should go so strongly through the organization. We are not going to tolerate this anymore. And then to have it again in such a short period of time, to me, as a person that's been in those situations before, somewhere along the line, there is a break in the continuity of discipline and just goodwill as far as the players are concerned, the whole organization. I mean, you are truly letting down not just your teammates, but the whole organization, and especially the fans.
And you're 2-8.
Just really uncalled for. I know. You know, you look at that record. I mean, really, you know, I know that after the last win that they had, you know, everybody was talking about a 10-6 record. That is so far away now. You know, really right now, you know, the discussion that I come across is, will they win another game?
Wow. Okay, so the Bears look to be without Jay Cutler for an extended period of time.
Yes.
NFL.com says torn labrum. We still don't know. Tomorrow, though, John Fox will give us a vagary when it comes to what's wrong with Jay Cutler.
Yes.
But what do we expect moving forward? I mean, when you're talking about a third-string quarterback in Matt Barkley, I mean, what from a fan standpoint, what can we expect from the Chicago Bears?
I would say some empty seats. You know, I've talked with fans that have been loyal Chicago Bear fans for years and years and years, and it's just disappointing to hear them say, I've sold my tickets. I've given them away. I've let somebody else use them. You know, that's a sheer sign of desperation. And, you know, what a shame after this incredible year in Chicago with the Chicago Cubs that this season would follow that world championship baseball situation, you know, where the Bears just couldn't pick up the slack. You know, they couldn't even come close to doing what the Chicago Cubs did, but, you know, not only not doing it in terms of wins and losses, but I think, you know, the Chicago Bear fans, they've always been so gracious. I played on so many teams here, Justin, which we did not have a good record, but we were crunching. We were smashing the other team physically, running the ball over them, or playing tough defense. And there's not even any of that going on right now. There's no substitution, not only for the wins, but just a sense of relief to watch your Chicago Bears be very physical and dominating, you know, as far as the line of scrimmage goes. And I think you add all those things up, that's what makes this year so intolerable.
Yeah. Doug Plank, the former Chicago great safety, number 46, now an analyst as well. As a former coach from the NFL and other ranks, always joining us here after Bears games. We're hoping they'd be wins, but they're losses. But, Doug, we will hope for the best against Tennessee. Like I said, Matt Barkley, the next six games, he goes 6-0. They get to 8-8, you know. Vikings and Lions lose the rest of the way.
Well, you know what? And I've done a Tennessee game this year, and, you know, so they have their issues too. There's certainly weaknesses on that football team. You know, they are disciplined as far as their defensive schemes are concerned, but it's certainly a winnable game by the Chicago Bears. And you know what? The season has to start somewhere. Somewhere in that locker room, somebody has to stand up and say, I am tired of this. This is not going to go on any longer, and I won't accept anything less than 100% from everybody in this room.
There you go. Doug Plank, always a pleasure to talk to you, man. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thanks, Justin.
I know. We should get an outing together now that all the Bears fans are giving away their tickets. We should wait until and make the decision, Rob, until maybe like the Thursday before so we can see the weather. And when it gets really cold and really crappy, that's when we swoop in.
Well, how much are they going to pay me? to take the tickets off their hands.
It might swing that way,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
It becomes a moneymaker. It's a revenue opportunity. I wasn't saying going to the game.
All right.
You just may make a little bit of scratch.
$200 in your parking pass will take the tickets off your hand.
Or at least, yeah, there's got to be. I'll bet you if you went down and just kind of meandered around the tailgating at whenever the next Soldier Field game is. Did they play? They're in Tennessee or are they in Chicago? They're here.
I don't know. Yeah.
And just kind of walk around like, oh, yeah, how's it going? A couple high fives. I'll bet you can get a ticket. At this point, they're like, we've got like 40. Do you want to go? And if we have a pork chop sandwich, you can have both. So there's that.
In the NBA, the Bulls continue their 2-week road trip as well. Justin Kaufman jinxing them tonight. They had a sizable lead. Denver tied it at the half. They now lead 89-84 late in the third quarter.
Yeah, I blame it on the Bulls' second team. So we'll see what happens in the fourth quarter. Right now, the bench mob for the Bulls getting their butt kicked. But we'll see. The starters look good. They came out at halftime. They look good. It's all good.
Let's see. Nikola Mirotic, 10 points. Isaiah Cannon. 2 points.
Yeah, he's doing well. All right, we'll talk about it later.
Okay.
They'll win this game. They're going to win this game.
Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, a new feature film is out this week, both in theaters and on iTunes. It's called Love Is All You Need. There's a question mark on the end. And it's the first feature film for director K. Rocco Shields. Its feature is based on the 2010 short film of the same name that grabbed all sorts of attention. The plot, what if straight were gay and gay were straight? What if we lived in a world where homosexuality was the norm and religion, family values, and our social network thought heterosexuality to be taboo? Back in 2010, the short film went viral with over 60 million views. It was seen as a rallying cry against gay bullying. Since that time, we've seen gay marriage legalized, upheld by the Supreme Court, and overall shift of acceptance in this country. Or have we? Director K. Rocco Shields, my guest tonight on the Download. Great to meet you. Great film. Tremendously intense.
You know, you got to hit on these topics. They are extremely relevant, and it's, I don't think, as intense as what's happened to the community even in the past year.
Let's talk about the concept. I mean, if straight were gay and gay were straight. I mean, this is really something that, I mean, it's pretty simple storytelling in the way that you just flip the script a little bit.
So this inversion of gay is straight and straight is gay has actually been done before. So I'm not claiming originality on this. It's actually been done on skits. It's actually been done on a musical called Xana Don't. But every single time it's done, we take stereotypes and we utilize them with this inversion. So there are rainbows in the sky and everyone's dancing around,
right,
singing Broadway
right
tunes. And unfortunately, that inversion is only good for the LGBT community because they can relate to the comedy there. My vision of this film was to create a relatable experience for all audiences in which we could really look at bullying, human rights, and prejudice with this reverse lens. And so in doing so, I create our reality with just that simple inversion. Obviously, a few things would be different,
right,
which makes the film kind of interesting, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's the relationships. There's a lot that goes into it that you don't really, on first glance, recognize. That's the one thing I found myself, almost in a strange way, my brain tricking me and being halfway going, I see what this relationship is, and not necessarily pink, because it isn't hit over the head. It isn't something that you're like, you know, this is the male character, this is the female character, this is the heterosexual, this is the homosexual. There's so much that goes in that it almost seems like you went out of your way to remove that kind of storytelling.
I absolutely did. This is a very fine line, this movie. It's a very fine line in its effectiveness, and it's a very fine line in how you make these choices in order to convey this world. And my vision as a filmmaker was to and is to engage our mainstream America and the world in a way that creates empathy. And only by looking in the mirror and seeing what these things look like if you were the one being bullied, mm-hmm, can you actually feel that empathy. Because I think as a society, there's this thing called cognitive dissonance. Just kind of learn,
yep,
that. And, you know, people see things on the news and all these terrible things are reported and we say, oh man, that's too bad that happened to someone else. It's too bad that happened to them. Someone should fix that. You know, we need to make a change. It should get better from here. But it doesn't. And, you know, although we're more accepting as a culture, these things still happen. And so ultimately, I feel that our society needs this empathy in order to feel it. All great movements happen from this empathy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people out there doing this work and the grassroots efforts that they are doing had this happen to them. Like, you know, the Matthew Shepard Foundation was created by Judy Shepard. Why? Because her son was the victim of a hate crime. Mm-hmm. You know, the Tyler Clemente Foundation, same thing. And so the more we can make this a personal thing to all audiences, I think the more we are going to create change.
Well, it's the one thing that struck me, and we kind of talked about this right before we started, was it is very intense. There are intense moments in this movie. It's when you're surrounding the issue of bullying, not just in high schools, but also in religion and everything that goes with it, that there is a point in 2016 where you go, that's not really happening, is it? And then your secondary thought is, it is. And if it is, this is stark. And it's something that I don't necessarily have to deal with in my life, but people are dealing with, and it's something that you almost have to tell yourself two or three times watching this film that this is something that truly does happen.
This is current events. This is really what happens on a daily basis. Most hate crimes are not reported because of fear. And although we are showing one main storyline is loosely based on that of Matthew Shepard, this is like a very real experience. That was just the first time it hit the news. You know, even overseas right now at this very minute, people are being put to death for being gay.
Right.
So it is very real. And people who say that it is not need to kind of go outside this and start to see really what's happening. And I think by that recognition and that realization, I think that we will really get somewhere.
Talk about the pushback. I mean, because obviously there is a stark messages sent about religion, about our school systems, about our social systems. Have you felt pushback on telling the story the way you told it?
Okay, so the short film I launched into the world on the festival circuit. It circulated in 2010, and it won some awards just being in the height of, you know, bullying, just hitting the forefront of the news. And it was created because reporters were reporting on this bullying and these teen suicides, and they were saying, I just don't understand how a young innocent can take their life. And I was staring at the TV, and I was thinking, if you knew what it was like to be, you know, the proverbial other and to be stigmatized and pushed away by everything that you know is normal, maybe you would understand. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately my take on this was born. And, you know, going from there, I was about to put it into the educational system because it is a great learning tool, and adapt it so it was available for all audiences. And then it was leaked on the internet. And before I knew it, with no press, no marketing, no nothing, this thing went to millions and millions and millions overnight.
Millions.
60
million as we sit here. Yeah.
And so I knew I had something. And then it started getting self-translated into different languages by radicals all over the world. They would send me these transcriptions, some by like secret firewall, because they were worried about their communities finding out and imprisoning them, because they wanted to spread this message. This message is truly effective. Mm-hmm. As far as the pushback, the short, you know, I did get death threats. I had people calling my office. I had crazy emails. I had two teachers fired in different parts of the world, one as recent as 9 months ago, for showing the short film in their classrooms after it was hailed as an international educational tool. However, more than that, I have seen its ability to transform and inspire. I've had kids from all over the world write me also and say, we showed this film in my school and it stopped bullying. I saw your film and I realized I wasn't alone. I saw your film and I stopped cutting myself, and I owe it to you.
I mean, you had to know at some point that it would be controversial to be able to invert this and tell the story in this way. Did you recognize that you would, I mean, when making the film, the short and the feature now, that there would be this kind of pushback, that there would be some negative response to the film?
I think with every statement that is powerful, that makes people think, there is always going to be pushback, because the more you think and the more you talk, the more you're going to have a difference in opinion. And so ultimately that is what's happened a millionfold with my film. And, you know, seeing that pushback from the short and seeing some of the real stories that came out of it, and then people coming to me and saying, you've told my story for the first time that I could show this to my parents, and now they can understand. When I was finally able to make this feature film, I pulled no punches. This is a very real depiction, and some may call it, you know, a little bit overwhelming. But my answer to this is twofold. One, it is nothing compared to what the LGBTQ society goes through on a daily basis.
The real thing, right?
Actually, what you're seeing in the feature film is it makes you feel more than it actually is explicitly violent. So I'm using kind of the devices of some of some amazing filmmakers that I've studied all my life. Like, for example, Alfred Hitchcock, the scene in Psycho, the shower scene. Those quick cuts and those things that you do not see makes your brain connect and make it feel far worse. And so that's the same kind of techniques I'm utilizing throughout the films.
I guess, you know, and we're talking with Kay Rocco Shields. She's a filmmaker. Her debut film, feature film, is Love Is All You Need, which is based on the short film. It's out right now, both in theaters and on iTunes, digital download. It's one thing, I think, because a lot of people will say, okay, it's an inverted story. So gay is straight and straight is gay. And then when you get to the points where there is hate crime, where there is violence, where there is intolerance, when there is just this insensitivity to the point where you feel like it's almost abnormal, it's alien in a way, I wonder if that's the point where they're like, okay, we get it. You know, that, okay, we get it. But that's the pushback. As someone who saw it, who felt that himself, myself, at 40 minutes into the movie, 50 minutes in, going, all right, I know where you're going. I get what's happening. You don't have to show it. You do have to show it.
I do. Otherwise, it becomes another thing that people just gloss over and say, oh, that's too bad that happens. The idea behind my film is that the audience feels bullied themselves, and only through that experience are they able to really come to these amazing realizations at the end of it. Quick story for you. You know, after all the surgence with the short film, I was terrified to put out the feature because you want to top it, but when you have acclaim. And so I showed it for the first time at the at a film festival up in San Jose at Cinequest, and a woman came to me after my very first screening the very next day. She said, are you Kay Rocco Shields? She, like, accosted me. I took a step back. I was like, yes. Oh, my God. And she said, you brought my mother back to me. My mother saw your film last night at its world premiere, and she called me today for the first time in 20 years.
Wow.
She now understands what it's like to be me because I'm a lesbian, and we have not been able to talk because she could not understand it. And now she's honestly starting a PFLAG chapter in her small religious town. Like, that is the amazing transformational power of this film. I can't even believe it.
People, I mean, after the short film and the 60 million views, there, you know, you have been someone who is that people want to work with. I mean, they talk about your film career taking off. To choose to do this film, to do a feature off of the short, let's talk about the technical aspect of being able to take a story from something that is short to feature. But also, I mean, to be able to talk about the same things we just talked about, the idea of bullying an audience, to really go after them emotionally, that's a tough thing to do for filmmakers. I mean, you've seen it go one way or another when it comes to filmmakers trying to find a different kind of emotion from an audience as opposed to, I'm watching a movie. I mean, talk about that, because there could have been a lot of other choices for you to do as your first feature film.
There could have been, and there were times in this process where I thought maybe I should do something more mainstream, something a little more easier, but no. I chose this, and I have fought for this and vouched for it, and I have gotten people behind me, and now they are, thankfully, all believers after seeing it. And, you know, when you take a short film and you adapt it, the most beautiful part of this is that I was able to see how that was the response to it, see the negative, see the positive, and really workshop that thing.
Right.
So, and then rewrite the feature 70 different times. Like, I do believe that a script is never finished. It's rewritten and rewritten and rewritten until you just can't, much like this film was edited and edited and edited until I was not able to anymore because they pulled it out of my hands. They were calling me Howard Hughes for a while there. But anyway, you know, it's the first draft of the film, you know, the feature. I wanted to create an adult love story where we see two adults fall in love in this reversed context. And, you know, since the short spoke to the young child and the innocence of that, you know, I felt that that would be a natural adaptation. And upon writing it and looking at it and getting some feedback from some of my amazing mentors in the film industry, I realized that that was very one note, and I had this amazing opportunity to portray this inversion and to speak to it on only one relationship was not doing it justice, because
right.
This is not a movie where there's going to be sequels.
Well, I mean, there's a lot going on in
yes.
the movie, the plot-wise. I mean, for what happens, like you said, to the young girl, to the star of the football team, which is a whole different atmosphere around sports and culture. to parents and how parents deal with it, to religion, and what I thought interesting, to artists, to a teacher who wants to try and push the envelope and a principal that's not ready for that.
And that's exactly what happened with the short. You had these teachers showing my short film, much like the teacher in the film who takes Romeo and Julia and changes it to Romeo and Juliet. The same thing happens to him that happened to the teacher. So everything is self-reflexive, and it's a really interesting thing to explore.
You know, I'm interested in what is the takeaway for you? I mean, for to put this, to now have it in theaters, to, you know, have people available to watch it on iTunes. At the end of the day, what do you want them to take away from this?
Well, key to this is, like, I am not, it's not my voice anymore. You see the film and you feel it. And I have this amazing ensemble cast. Like, I was able, because of that short film, to pull together an amazing, amazing group of talented actors that are also now going to be the speakers of this film and its mission. So I'm so excited to see what happens. As far as the takeaway, I feel like the same old films and TV is done and done, and my role and my job as a filmmaker and an artist is to express new and bigger ideas in bigger ways in order to change the society that I do believe needs a little bit of a nudge.
Kay Rocco Shields, her debut film, it's called Love Is All You Need. You can find it on iTunes. It's also in theaters now. Thanks so much for coming in and talking about the film. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Oh, that music. We haven't heard that in such a long time here in 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's The Download, and it's time. It's Tuesday night for The Worst. This, of course, where we complain, bemoan about the worst things in our society for prizes. That's essentially the bit, right?
Yes.
That's it. 312-981-7200. You can call in or you can text what you think is the worst. Joining me in studio tonight, two comedians from Chicago and regulars to The Worst, Soli Santos.
Hello.
Soli, good to see you. She will be at the Public House Theater on November 27th for the Be Happy, Forget About the Election variety show, the Public House Theater at 3914 North Clark Street. Also, Blake Burkhart. Is the man, he's the guy who does Comedians You Should Know at Timothy O'Toole's right here in Streeterville, right around the corner on Ontario.
Yep.
9:30 on Wednesday night. Tomorrow night, big show. Everyone's back for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we have two original cast members in, Mike Leibowitz and Joe Kilgallen, two of the funniest guys I've ever met.
Great show.
Oh, yeah.
A classic Chicago stand-up show.
Every Wednesday night.
And also does a podcast for the Laugh Factory and the Laugh Factory Network. Good to see you guys. All right, 312-981-7200. We got some great prizes to give away to the top three contestants tonight who give us the best, the worsts. I've got some great things for treetime.com. I've also got something about the Cubs, the commemorative hardcover book. We did the segment last week on this. And also Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lots to give away tonight. So let's get to it. 312-981-7200. Also, I have to say, we probably we're in a new era of the worst. So right away, the first one that comes in, the first five that have come in, have been Donald Trump.
Oh,
which is
course.
It's like, no, this is a non-Donald Trump. We're not going to do that. That's not going to be the worst. We're not going to do political figures. You got to come up with you got to work a little bit harder, right, Pete? Pete Zimmerman joins us. Pete always kicks us off.
That's right.
You don't do a Donald. Your worst tonight is not
political.
A Donald Trump. Right?
No.
All right.
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
Restaurants that make their own ketchup.
Oh my God.
Just give me the Red Heinz. Don't try to be fancy with your homemade artisanal business. Just Heinz.
Are there really restaurants that do, like, do they put it on the menu? Like, is it an extra fee?
No, it just, you know, it comes with your fries and you dip and you're like, what is it?
It tastes a little weird.
Yeah.
There's something a little off with them. I know what you're talking about. And it's a weird red color. It's not the same.
Right. Yes.
Yes.
The worst.
The worst.
I agree with
pointless.
You.
All right, there you go. 773 chimes in to start with. You know what's the worst? Gum under the tables in restaurants.
That was one of the worst I was going to bring up. Yeah.
See? Great.
Good for that guy.
Light.
Yeah.
There you go.
I can't believe we still have to talk about that.
I know. Like, it's 2016.
You'd think only children would do something like that.
If Donald Trump really wanted to endear himself to many, it would be to get rid of the gum underneath tables in restaurants.
Who's
doing that? Happened to me earlier this week because I'm a personal trainer. I had a clipboard while I was training somebody. I put it on a windowsill at the gym where I work at. And when I went to lift up the clipboard, there was gum stuck underneath. I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I wanted to fight somebody.
I put my hand on a railing going upstairs and felt dumb immediately. So I wrote that down.
I love it. We are absolutely
everybody's synced up.
We are synced up on a gumster, the worst gum. Just gum in general. All right, let's start with you guys. Blake, what do you got for the worst this week?
All right, the worst is being a Chicago Bears fan who is also not a Cubs fan, a White Sox fan. So,
yeah.
Cub fans probably could care less that the Bears are the worst team.
I can't tell you how many Cubs fans I've talked to who said they just started watching the Bears. I think it was during the Buccaneers blowout, one of the worst games in Bears modern day history.
Yeah.
And that's the one where like, hey, the World Series is over. I guess I'll get back to the Bears.
Yeah, I heard
all that.
They should just sit the season out. The Cubs fans should just be happy and don't bother watching this.
They just keep going
back. It's all I have now.
That's all. At least you got the Blackhawks and the Bulls, right?
Right.
Yeah. All right, Sully, what do you got?
Well, being that Thanksgiving is this Thursday.
All right, yes, here we go.
I felt the need to throw in some of those. When you get there and you're ready to eat your favorite dish and for some reason your mom didn't make it that year.
Oh.
That is the worst.
You don't coordinate ahead of time?
Well, I mean, you know, sometimes she does her thing and I just let her do her thing, you know, because I'm not participating in the cooking, so I don't want to put pressure on like making requests. But when it doesn't happen, my heart is broken inside.
You should do what my family does, which is just complain about it vocally for like 2.5 hours. It just becomes bits. It becomes a bit, which is never
I didn't say I didn't complain about it. I'm just saying.
Good, good. All right, let's go to the phone lines, 312-981-7200. Let's go to Marie. Marie, what's the worst, Marie?
Dried pizza that's brought to you during the holidays as a gift.
What?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like where they like dry seal, like air seal it. A lot of it's for people who like live in LA and they're like, I always want Chicago pizza. Well, here it is. That kind of thing.
Tasted more like glue and cement.
Glue and cement.
Oh, no.
All right, Marie. Well, that's terrible. Okay. Well, that is the worst. Glue and cement is the worst when it's supposed to be Chicago pizza. Appreciate you calling in. Paul, what's the worst, Paul?
Hey, I'm a big fan of puns, and the worst is when the Sun-Times front page does not have a pun.
They do that. What would you say is the pun ratio for the Chicago Sun-Times?
It's got to be 90%.
90%. So 4 out of 5 days a week, they're like, well, you know what? Let's go with a pun.
Yeah.
Do they? I haven't seen, even though we get the Chicago Sun-Times paper copy here, I read it online now. Are they still doing the weather word, like in the left-hand corner of the front page?
I think it's in the upper right or something. Yeah.
There's always there's puns in that too, right?
Well, whether you like them or not,
it's good. All right, thanks, Paul. Thanks for the call. There you go. So we're getting already off to a good start. Lots of texts coming in. 312-981-7200. We're playing the worst tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get some more in. Stay with us. Very, very exciting that so many people are coming out of the woodwork to talk about the worst. It's been too long. This has become a cathartic experience for Chicagoland. The worst we play every Tuesday night here. We haven't had a chance to play because of Blackhawks games, the election, everything in between since October. Soli Santos and Blake Burkhardt bring us back. Regulars here on the worst tonight. 312-981-7200. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Celeste. Celeste, what's the worst, Celeste?
The worst is setting your TV to record Madam Secretary and getting the last ticking clock of 60 minutes. And then the great, is it the Survivor? I don't know. We're on this. Two people are out in couples trying to beat other couples all over the world. I'm not watching that crap.
So you DVR and it is an extra, like CBS's clock is off by like 10 seconds or 30 seconds.
But you know, if you go on the guide, it tells you it's supposed to be Madam Secretary.
Don't get me started, Marie.
And then you have to go on demand and you're stuck with the commercials and you cannot fast forward through them.
I hear you, Celeste. Thank you for that. It's the worst.
Hey,
thank you for that.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yep,
Have a great evening. Bye-bye.
That's I've complained about DVR the worst for a long time. You know what's the worst than that is when you DVR a sporting event. I've done this with Bears games. And the game goes over the time allotted, and you're watching your DVR, and you're like, this is going to end before the game does. But you're watching it in past. so you don't get the last minute of the game, right. And that's just a ruined experience.
How have they not made it so that they know everyone wants to see the end of the game? They know that.
Right.
Can they just automatically record? Because that happens to me more often than not. It's
like
terrible.
I say, man, Donald Trump. You know, if there's one thing, there's a lot of things that can be fixed. I'm looking forward to a president-elect Trump.
Maybe he'll be good for things
he'll be
like
good.
That.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for, you know, to fix the DVR situation we have in this country. There's a
I'd
lot
love
he
to hear
do.
Him mention
if
DVR.
He does anything, if he does anything during his presidency, right?
Yeah,
right? Let it be that.
Hey, you know what? If that's
priorities,
what I feel like that's what he ran on.
I like
find
your
silver
priorities.
Lining somewhere, yeah.
312-981-7200. All right, let's go back to the panel. Soli, what do you got? Give us another the worst.
When you try to fry a turkey and you set your garage on fire.
Yeah.
That's
the
worst.
Have you actually done that?
No, thank goodness. But we've had some close calls. Actually, a friend of mine tried to do it one year, and I jumped at like 10 feet back.
You see the YouTube videos of it, especially when they're deep frying a turkey, right. And you see that all the time. But I've never actually done it. The worst I've ever done when it's come to like kitchen mishaps, and I can't live this one down. It always gets brought up in my family, is I was cooking a frozen pizza one time, and I didn't recognize, I was home alone, that my wife had put a candle on the oven, right?
Uh-huh, yes.
It's a really annoying place to put a candle, but it was decorative. So I did the pizza and I wasn't paying attention, and the candle melted onto the oven and went into the slots behind it.
Oh, no.
So like it essentially ruined the oven. So every time you turn the oven on, it smelled like burnt candle.
Sure.
It was vanilla. It was vanilla. So it wasn't, I could argue it made the kitchen smell better. But we had to get a new oven after a while.
No.
I know. And I was I was so mad at myself for not seeing it, but I was also mad that there was a candle on the oven.
Yeah, worst place.
Why is it? Why is it there?
It's such a goofy thing to I don't want to say that.
Worst place in the house.
Your wife doesn't listen to this show.
No, she's moved on. But yeah. Okay.
What a dumb
she's
idea.
She's checking the end of the Bulls game. But it was not my finest hour. All right, Blake, what do you got?
Well, for the single people out there like myself, answering questions about your love life at the Thanksgiving table.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. Listen, there's another single person in the house tonight, and you are correct.
Really?
Yeah. That was also on my list. It was what I was...
Who's the culprit? I mean, because it's not going to be your parents necessarily. It's going to be aunts, uncles, grandparents.
Well, the worst part, and it happens every year, is the attention will turn to you. You know, like someone will ask a question, and then you'll respond.
Who's the lonely one at the table?
Right, yeah. You'll respond as best you can, and then you just want that to be the end, and then there's a follow-up
question.
You feel like, yeah, you're on the press junket or something.
Darn it, Blake, what is the problem?
Right.
What's wrong with you that you can't keep a woman?
Yeah, and then they bring up your exes, and they're like, well, what went wrong there? And it's like, well, how much time do you have? Let's go.
Isn't there a Michael Jackson special on we can watch after Pie, Grandma?
Awkward.
Yeah, I've never really had that problem. That my family knows enough about my single and my love life and all that kind of stuff that they don't pry.
You're lucky, man.
We don't want to know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, all right. So let's keep going here. Let's go to the text already making me crack up. 214. What's the worst? You know what's the worst? The UP of Michigan. Why is it called UP? There's no LP. And it says, there's just a hand. And while we're at it, let me talk to the hand. Michigan, let it go. It's attached to Wisconsin. Better yet, sell it to Canada. You need the cash. They're really mad about this.
Wow.
I like that.
Leave Michigan alone. Jeez.
I know, right? All right. 331 says, the worst is when you're all set to enjoy a grilled octopus salad purchased at the market. You open up the container to find a fly in it.
No.
$18.95 a pound.
That's when you go back.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that's...
And if I worked at that market, I'd be like, you put that fly there.
I know, but I'd be so angry. I'd be like, no.
I've seen this kind of a million times.
You know what?
The old fly in the octopus salad trick. Huh?
Get out. That's it. Next, you're going to tell me there's gum. Gum underneath the tables. 815 says, when you just get your carpets cleaned and your cat erps up all over it.
Oof.
I like that one, Chan. Thank you for that. Erps.
Yeah, I like
word.
That word.
Erps.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. I'm making sure that this is okay. All right. I think this one's appropriate. I'm not sure. It took me a while to read through it. That's why I just had that moment where I'm like, this is going to turn into something rated R, but we're after 10 o'clock. 705 says, the worst is when the business in the front does not match the party in the back. So I'm in line at Target, and in front of me is a young woman with beautiful long blonde hair and long legs and high, high heels, wearing a tight skirt and a sweater. I love, ooh, a sweater. I'm drawn in. After a minute, she turns around, and I almost had to grab her. She was the age of my grandmother.
No.
I love Soli. No, that could have been it. If she was good, if she was actually like 25 and she turned around, you think this guy's like, yes, I'm in. Yeah. Something tells me that there's not a lot of pickups happening at the Target line.
No, I was going to say that. I like he got his hopes up at the line at Target. Like, oh, she's perfect. It's like, well, you're in line,
you're at Target. So, yeah. Probably not going to go
anywhere. Who she
is. She's not high maintenance. She shops at Target.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, but she sounds pretty hard and high maintenance. She's got long legs and high heels.
Well, if she's 94 and she's dressed like she's 24, well, then that does sound like high maintenance. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So, I don't know. If I could give some advice to 705, get a number. You know, see where it goes. You're obviously somewhat interested.
Right.
847, the worst is reaching under your desk to pick up what you dropped and coming up with something from the last guy's nose. Ugh. Oh, man.
That's
in the gum varietal.
Yes.
Yep.
Right? Ooh, these are good tonight. 708, the worst is being friendly with the person that works at the laundromat. And then one day you go and she asks me for money.
Mm. Oh. Awkward.
So I have so many questions to that one. It says being friendly with the person that works at the laundromat. Mm-hmm. So they're friendly with, hey, good to see you. They're on a job. And they're like, hey, can you get any extra scratch? I'm only getting a certain amount an hour for this. Right? It's one thing if you both were at the laundromat and they're like, listen, I really need some cash. You know, like I'm really hard up. I can barely finish this load of laundry.
Right.
But this person works at the laundromat. And what are we talking about when you're asking for money? Like quarters, dollars?
They got plenty of quarter options. Yeah, right. You can't get some change?
Like a small business loan? What are
bust
we asking?
Bust one of the machines open.
It's got to be
right
away.
Right there.
Right.
All right. This is a contender for all these are contenders. These are great tonight. 312-981-7200. All right. I like this one. This one is a top three for me. 262. The worst is when you flip your kayak over after your wife tells you not to go out and you lose your shoes.
That's happened to all of
us. I have so many questions. Yeah. This one,
I think it's pretty straightforward, Soli. I think his wife goes, don't go out there.
That's every other day.
Yeah, I would not take that kayak out there today. I'm taking the kayak out.
Sober?
Can't tell me what to happen.
Not sober.
Right, no, there's
was
the
this
question.
After an argument? Are you going out there like, yeah, you can't tell me what to do. I'm going to go get a... You don't know. Like, there's so many questions. Like, how far did you go with the kayak? Did you live by the river? Like, is it in your backyard? Yeah. Did you, like, drive? Like, did you rent one? Did you go by the lake? Where did this happen?
He's like, he got all mad. And he's like, I'm driving an hour and a half
to
Lake
Ottawa.
Yeah, that's
my point. And the whole time he's like cursing and talking to himself. She can't tell me what to do. I'm going to do it myself. And then the whole time he's there. And then he
loses his shoes.
Yeah.
Where'd they go? I mean, he just lost them in the water?
And now he's got to go back and be like, what am I going to tell her? She's going to give me like an hour and a half drive back.
Don't say anything. He walks in with like wet socks. Don't.
I don't want to talk about it, okay?
I learned my lesson. You were right.
I don't want to talk about
it.
That's he's so got
good.
Like
so
one
good.
Sock with a toe out.
So
yeah, that one makes me really happy.
It really does.
I do like that one.
That is a good one. All right, Blake Burkhardt, Soli Santos in studio tonight. We're playing the worst, 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news, and we'll come back. We're complaining about the worst things in society for prizes. Stay with us. Well, I did it, Rob. I jinxed it.
I wasn't going to say anything
you
until
were,
sports.
You were gonna lead with that story. I was already talking about how this team rivaled, this Bulls team's rivaled the 96-97 Bulls.
Uh-huh. Sure.
They were up 17 in the first quarter. I was like, there's no one stopping. Golden State, who? And then here I am.
Nuggets, baby.
Nuggets come back.
110-107 the
beat
final.
Beat the Bulls. All right. I'll never talk of the Bulls again.
Well,
I'm. It's like a superstition.
You know, you got cutesy with your little stats there
cutesy
earlier. You know,
with my googling,
nifty little stats.
If there's one thing I learned, it's lose the googling. Like no more googling sports stats.
That's not your fault. They couldn't hold the lead, man.
They couldn't. I blame it. I do blame this on the players that played the game, not necessarily me in Chicago spouting stats in the first quarter.
It's going down, y'all. worst. When worst come the worst. When worst come the worst. When worst come the worst. My people come first. When worst come the worst.
It's the worst here, 720 WGN. Play it every Tuesday night, 10 o'clock, and of course when we have a show. Soli Santos and Blake Burkhart in studio tonight. Soli is going to be at the Public House Theater on Sunday, November 27th. This Sunday, yeah?
Yes.
The Be Happy, Forget About the Election Variety Show, which is at the Public House Theater, which is 3914 North Clark Street. Also, Blake Burkhart is the, what would you call it, the host? Are you the host of?
I'm part of the team there. There's okay. About six of us.
Comedians You Should Know, which is a classic stand-up showcase here in Chicago, which has been at Timothy O'Toole's a couple years now. Mm-hmm. Around the block here from our studios at Ontario and Fairbanks and Streeterville, Wednesday nights at 9:30. To this Wednesday, tomorrow, of course, yeah. A big night. And also does podcasts at the Laugh Factory Network and perform. And Soli's part of the Cates as well. And regulars here in the Worst. 312-981-7200. The number to call to get going. Let's go back. Let's get back into the routine. Soli, why don't we start with you? You got any more of the Worsts?
Yes.
Of course
And
you
I'm going to keep the whole Thanksgiving
I love it.
Going.
I love it.
The Worst. The actual history of the origin of Thanksgiving. That's the Worst.
It really is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did you see the Saturday Night Live where Kristen Wiig just makes up facts about Thanksgiving in her monologue this weekend? It was pretty funny, but it's playing off the fact that it is pretty...
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's a pretty... Well, I mean, I don't... And it, the thing that always got me was the idea that, you know, teaching Thanksgiving, I mean, they obviously are giving thanks, but when right. You get to the pilgrims and the Indians and the story of Thanksgiving, it always is just ends up being... strange construction paper projects for first graders, but there's really not much about the story that goes
right.
behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. All right, Blake, what do you got?
Whatever it is in turkey that makes you so tired after you eat it.
Is it tryptophan?
Tryptophan,
I think it's tryptophan.
Yeah.
I almost wrote that down because I know it from the Seinfeld episode, but I wasn't sure if that was accurate or not.
I like how he's like, I learned that word on Seinfeld.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I get all my information from sitcoms, yeah. But it's like you're having a great time talking to people you love, and then you're just like, I can't say another word. Yeah. I have to lay
talking
down now.
You'd be like, hey, that was really great.
For me, I'll give it Thanksgiving. The worst, you know what's the worst for Thanksgiving? When the wine's not working. When you get to like the, you know, like you eat so much in your fourth or fifth glass and you're just nothing's happening and you're just like, now all this is just going to add to the malaise of
right.
food and drink and it's not getting me buzzed in any form. And I'm like, why
I'm
am I drinking this?
Sober.
That's right. The worst. That's when it doesn't yeah. work out. And then I would say the worst is that moment after dessert when you're not sure if it's time to leave, time to go, time to take your pants off. Like you're not sure what to happen. You end up like watching stupid TV that's a special, you know, like some sort of music special.
Right.
That you're just on and you're like, and it's only 7:30. You don't know what to do. Like, I'd say any time after 7 o'clock on Thanksgiving night,
right.
It's the worst.
It's an awkward thing.
Great.
Like, how long do I sit here?
How long do I either
digest
A, leave?
For a little bit.
Or take my pants off. Like, it's one of those two. So those yep. All right, Pete, what do you got for the worst? You want to bring one more to us?
Sure. Well, this is not Thanksgiving related, though. It's just the worst in general. You know what the worst? You know what's the worst?
What's the worst? Pete?
Yellow cars.
Just in general?
Yeah. Yeah. What's the point? Unless you're driving a taxi,
right.
Go with a blue. And
yeah.
It's always usually like a Hummer or like some souped yeah. up, you know, Camaro or something.
Get a
regular
that would be
color.
A great psychological question, like who goes for the yellow car? Because it is, I mean, you really have to make a stretch to, I mean, it's usually not the car that's going to be on display in any form at the dealership.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be like, you got that in yellow?
Right. Or like bright green.
Yeah, right.
It's like, who?
Is there any way I could light up the undercarriage? Is there right. any way to make that happen?
With neon lighting?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I would, those are all girls are good.
Is there any way I can humiliate myself while I'm driving to work every morning?
Right.
All right, let me, let's go to the line. Let's go to Ken. Ken, what's the worst, Ken?
Okay, so I work at a flower shop, mm-hmm. and I had to take a delivery on my way home, but I also work a second job. The ladies kept reminding me, Kenny, don't forget, let's put a note in your car, don't forget. I get done with my second job, drive all the way home, pull in my driveway. I just remembered I need to drive back a half hour back to work to go grab my package and then drive home.
Ah, so just the idea of forgetting to pick something up.
Forgetting to, and then having to go out and still do it tonight.
Oh,
yes.
Man. It's, yeah, is that what true. You're doing right now?
I'm driving back to my room.
Oh, no, he's doing it right now.
It's a current worst. It's a current worst. We need
a
bell.
He's living it. He's living it.
We've got a current worst. Oh, Ken, we feel for you, man. Thank you.
Sorry, Ken.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, man. That's where this segment can be somewhat helpful as well.
Therapeutic?
Yeah. Therapeutic exactly, in the way, yes. Oh, that's terrible.
He's currently living
he's
his
currently
worst
living
right
the
now.
Worst.
Yeah.
You get that a lot on this segment where you get people who will text in or call in to be able to tell us what's happening in the moment. One guy a couple weeks ago, he texted in or he called in saying that he had how do you say this one? This is the one where he was driving to Madison and he was about maybe like half an hour there and he realized he forgot his wallet. Like, which was not only like his ATM, his cash, everything, and he didn't know he was there for business and he couldn't get any money to come back, so he like was like without anything, like, and he was explaining that in the moment. So,
that happened to me on a trip to DC. I didn't realize I didn't have my wallet until I was in Ohio and I was driving and I was speeding and I got pulled over and I didn't.
How do you not know? So you're like Ellen DeGeneres in the story today that she tweeted out that she forgot her ID at the White House. She was honored today for the special medal of whatever. And she forgot, she tweeted out, you know, I forgot my ID, so I'm not sure if I can get through security. But I'm Ellen. How do you not bring your ID to the White House? And how do you not bring your wallet on a trip to D.C.?
I thought it was in my bag.
But don't you, I feel like I should not speak on this topic.
I'm getting in trouble right now.
No, two things that, okay, so when I went to, I think I talked about it on the show, when I went to L.A. not too long ago, about 2 months ago, 3 months ago, I got to the airport and they're like, this license is expired.
See, look who's talking.
And I was like, what do you mean? And they're like, yeah, it expired on your birthday. My birthday was August. This was like the beginning of September. Like I had gone, had no thought. There was no like, even 2 months before, I wasn't like, oh man, I really have to take care of this at some point. It's just like, I never once checked the date on my ID for anything. Just no fleeting thought. And I was like, wow, huh. It's, huh. They showed it to me. I'm like, huh. And so, but I was renting a car in Oakland. So when I got to California or to LA or whatever, and I was like, oh shoot, what am I going to do? So I got there and I just played it off like I didn't know. And they still wouldn't let me rent. They wouldn't let me rent the car, obviously. But someone else I just had to act like I wasn't going
to
drive it.
That's happened to me before. One time, and this has always bothered me that they enforce this so hard. I think I had like $80 worth of booze on the counter getting ready for a party. And my license was expired when I was like 26 years old. And they're like, we can't say
what?
This. It's expired. And it's like, but it shows my age.
Yeah,
like,
right.
And who would be pulling off this con? Like, who would get the fake ID
that's expired?
Yeah, the 26-year-old balding guy.
That's like, because when I got to the airport, they didn't stop me at the airport. They didn't care. You would think
that's interesting.
Yeah,
that
they
would
were
be
like,
the place where I would think they'd stop you.
I won't say the name, but it's a very popular Chicago beverage.
Yeah, Depot.
Depot, yeah.
Right, right.
And they were like, no, absolutely not. And I was like, well, come on, like, please, like, is there anything you could do? And they were like, no. So I just left. I left it all on the counter.
It was like, oh, man.
I had like four big bottles of things and like a 30 rack of beer.
I have this ability to lose things. And I don't know. I really push back. My wife will always be like, no, you do it all the time. I'm like, no, I don't. It's not a thing. And we were just having this argument not like on the way to the airport. I swear, we got out of security just when I went to New York this weekend. And within 10 seconds, I'm like, where are my headphones? Like, I lost them in 10 seconds. I went back, they're like, they're not here. And I'm like, I just put them in the security thing. They're like, no, I wouldn't see them. I'm like, they're just gone, man.
Yeah.
So, like, I think there might be something about me that might be forgetful. Like, well, starting to realize that.
It's hard with renewing your driver's license because every time I go to the DMV and get a new one and it's like 6 years in the future, it's like, I don't even know if I'm going to be alive.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to think about renewing it ever.
What a horrible way to live.
That's a great way to live.
But it's like, there's no way I'm going to remember in 5.5 years to renew it because I'm not thinking about 22.
No, but see, they're not now because of the budget crisis.
Don't
they email that now?
No, they don't do anything. You're on your own. Welcome to the wild, wild west.
I got a reminder.
Maybe five years ago, during Blagojevich. Maybe George Ryan was sending reminders, but they're not doing it now. That's the big story.
He was so quick to be like, you're lying.
All right, here we go. 312, let's get back to the worst. 312-981-7200. The worst is when you're in line at a grocery store and you spot a quarter on the floor that no one sees yet. All you can think about is that darn quarter, but you're too embarrassed to pick it up. Finally, you go for it, but as you come back up to face the in the stairs of shame. So you quickly try to cover and say, is this yours? Is any? You're embarrassed. And this is the best part about this. He says, you quickly try to cover and say, is this yours? And the one person lies and says, yes. So not only is it shame of you picking up the loose quarter, but then you have to give it to the person who lied and you lose out on the quarter.
Oh, wow.
That's a good one.
Nobody told you to play it off like that. I would have put it in my pocket. I'd be like, look, I'm sorry.
I get very excited. There's not a lot of shame in me grabbing loose coins.
I'm never going to see those people again.
If there's silver on the ground, I'm like a linebacker.
Yeah.
I'm a Lovie Smith linebacker. I'm jump ball. I'm down. I'm on it. And I'm like, quarter mine.
I usually put my shoe over it real sly and then pretend I'm tying my shoe.
See, that's the way to do it. Right. Yeah, that's beautiful.
All right, let's go to John. John, what's the worst, John?
Hey, guys. The best of the worst is when you take off your wedding ring that you've had on your finger for 26 years and to wash your hands at an airport and forget to put it back on and get on a plane and fly home.
Oh no.
There's no way.
As soon as he said he took off that ring, we already knew where that was going.
Yeah. Like, do you not get it back? You can't even get it back. Like there's no way. I'm already in my head trying to think about how that ring.
Believe me, I tried.
Yeah, I was mine. I already grabbed it before it was off the. That's too bad.
It was a tough discussion when I got home.
I was in a public bathroom, baby. I lost my ring. Oh, that's terrible. All right, thanks, John. That's terrible.
All right, guys.
That's a good one. The worst, 312 says, the worst is when your friend calls your pants slacks.
Is that the worst?
It's a good one, right?
That's
really good.
I love the idea of someone getting really mad at that.
Like, how dare you?
Yeah. Joe calls his pants slacks. That's the worst. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we will crown some winners tonight. Stay with us.
It's going down, y'all. The worst come my people's come first. The worst come the worst. The worst come the worst my people's come first.
That's bad.
So funny. Can't do any bits without anyone calling you out. 630 says, I got a reminder 2 months ago about my license being expired. Yeah, but 630, maybe it's 630. They just got, you know what? They're more organized.
I thought I did when I, over the summer. My birthday's in September, and I remember I could have sworn I got one in July.
It doesn't help that the address that was on my license was probably from like 7 apartments ago.
Right.
Well, okay, well then.
I always have that.
Well, then
too,
maybe. Yeah. It's still
someone's
at
getting
that,
my reminder.
That
yeah.
other address.
Yeah. When it says, you know, like back L, you know, like the I'm living in the garden apartment. Up in Lincoln Square.
The poor person that lives in that address now has to deal with your junk mail.
They love it. When I lived in Ravenswood, there's a family that lived at the... I was up on the third floor, and the family that lived on the first floor, the kid was coming of age, 15, 16 years old, and he just had figured out... This was right when the internet was kind of starting, late 90s. Hmm. He had figured out how to essentially sign me up for all of the free video games, free CD collection, free... So, like, essentially, my identity was being stolen by the 16-year-old downstairs. And it was so obvious by what I was getting bills for.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the Mountain Dew Challenge or whatever. I'm like, okay, you know that I get the bill for that.
Mountain Dew.
Mountain Dew. You can get the 12-pack of Mountain Dew for 6 months of $59.95. I was like, yeah, so... All right, so anyway... All right, we're playing the worst, 312-981-7200. We've got a lot of prizes to give away tonight. We've picked our top three, so let's get to the prize list. Number three is going to get a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. Number two is going to get a hardcover commemorative book on the World Series champion Chicago Cubs. At 192 pages, it's the biggest book available on the historic season with a free poster inside, produced by Cubs fans for Cubs fans. This is the book Cubs fans have been waiting for their whole life. Get yours online at champsonly.com and use the promo code WGN to save 15% with free shipping. And number one's going to get a certificate for a desktop sports-themed artificial Christmas tree of your choice with white micro lights from Tree Time Christmas Creations on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington or at treetime.com. All right. Before we give away the give the answers, I want to thank Soli Santos. She will be at the Public House Theater this Sunday, November 27th, at the Be Happy, Forget About the Election variety show, the Public House at 3914 North Clark Street. She's also an ensemble member of the comedy group The Cates, and you can see her at Laugh Factory and other places all over town. Blake Burkhart is one of the ensemble members of The Comedians You Should Know, which is every Wednesday night at Timothy O'Toole's here in Streeterville, 9:30 tomorrow night, of course, and also does the podcast at The Laugh Factory as part of the Laugh Factory Podcast Network and does stand-up all over town. All right. Did I get all that right? Here we go. All right. Are we ready?
Yes.
Let's do it. Okay, so we're giving away third. We'll get the Lou Malnati's Pizza. This comes from 705. The worst is when the business in the front does not match the party in the back. So I'm in line at Target in front of me, and the young woman with beautiful long blonde hair and long, I love the description here, and long high heels. That's high. That's double high. Wearing a tight skirt and a sweater. I'm drawn in. After a minute, she turns around, and I almost had to grab her. She was the age of my grandmother. I don't know. The descriptive writing really did this one
yes,
for me.
Of course. Because there's a good visual there.
Yeah. I'm not sure that I know if that's the worst, because I don't know what would be the best in that scenario. She turned around, and she was 22. I don't know if you found your future wife. I just have a feeling you're just going to put your head down and go, don't look at her in the eye. Whatever you do. All right, so that's third. Second tonight, 331. The worst is when you're all set to enjoy a grilled octopus salad purchased at the market. You open up the container and you find a fly in it. $18.95 per pound. I love the fact that it's not just the food has a fly in it from the market, but then you got to throw in the actual price per pound.
That's high per pound.
Yeah, but I can see why. At 18, yeah.
Well, why wouldn't you just say the worst is when you're set to enjoy an expensive grilled octopus salad? Like throwing the, it's very Chicago to throw the how much it was a pound.
Yeah, that is a Chicago.
On the back end, like, you know, just it's $18.95 a pound. You know, if it's $12.95, I'd be okay. I'd just take the fly out of there. But we're talking $18.95. It's a lot, and that's a lot. All right. Good. All right, so drum whirl. Number one tonight, the number one here playing on the worst goes to our favorite from 262. The worst is when you flip your kayak over after your wife tells you not to go out and you lose your shoes. And we tried to get 262 on the line. They're not answering their phone because we had so many questions.
No. That's going to haunt me now.
I was saving. I think I just did, like, right there, I just did a little extended dance for 2 minutes by going slow to try and get 262 on the line because we have so many questions.
Yeah.
So many.
This might have to be an off-air conversation because I just want to know, like, are they experienced kayakers? Yes. What do you got, Pete? I mean,
was this the first time that his wife told him not to take that kayak?
Right, right.
Or the 20th time?
Right. There's some history there.
How many shoes has he lost kayaking? Was this the first pair?
He said he called. He just texted right now saying that he just got to work or he would call in.
Oh.
There was beer involved.
Oh. Of course there was.
Oh, you can't. Beer kayaking, not good. Drinking and kayaking.
That's the short lost answer, shoes. Yeah. That explains. Yeah.
Shoes are probably lucky that it was only the shoes, right?
Right. At this point. Good for him for giving a short, concise explanation.
He gave it to us right there.
That was there. That did kind of answer like multiple questions. Yep. It's like, of course. Now that makes sense.
Really, all the questions we've asked tonight are answered with, well, there was beer involved.
The like, end. Okay, well, great. The end.
There's still, but I need to know, like, is it a lake house? Like, did he have to travel? Did he load the kayak up on the top?
I agree.
Did he get so mad?
Was it already in there? Right. Does he have the kayak in his garage and he was putting it in all like, oh, I'm not going to listen to what she says. You know,
was it like the thing where he just popped up off his lazy boy at 11:30 at night on a Sunday? He's like, you know what I want to do?
Exactly.
He's like, don't you dare.
Yeah.
I'm going to go load it up. I'm going to go drive an hour to the lake and see what happens.
How long have they been married?
What kind of shoes were they?
Because that could really affect how, you know, how many times you're going to go with the beer and the kayaking and the lost shoes. I
mean, if they're 30 years in, he's just like,
I don't care what
white
you
noise,
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
If it's first year, then it's a little bit different, right?
Yeah. How many times do I got to tell you to not go out there with a kayak and he's just still going out there, you know?
So many questions for Soli Santos, Blake Burkhart. Thanks so much for being in studio.
Thank you, as always.
It was a blast.